using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Friday, the 12th of November, year of our Lord, 2021, day 606 of the emergency. Today we're going to take a look at the fact that it is the best of times and the worst of times for tyranny. We're going to get an update as to what is happening in Lithuania, as well as the pushback that is rising up in Melbourne, Australia. And in Florida, there's talk of nullifying OSHA. I think that's one of the best signs we've seen so far. And we're going to be joined today by John Kiriakou, very important, very honorable whistleblower who exposed the torture that was used to lie us into the Gulf War. And now, some more documents have been redacted, and we can talk a little bit more about what our government is capable of doing. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Well, everything is gradually starting to come to light, and of course, the issue is timing. And how long this is going to take, and are they going to be able to successfully imprison us and reset society and reset the rule of law permanently? They have removed the rule of law, but we now, this is one of the things that's just come out, the fact that the FDA has recalled millions of COVID test kits over false results. Now, they're all false positives, no false negatives. Let's see, are we going to reduce the case count by 2.2 million? Isn't that interesting? 2.2 million, that was exactly the number that popped out. You know, the information goes in here, and it goes round and round and round, and it comes out on the other end. And the number that they went with, because every time they ran this simulation at the Imperial College of London, Neil Ferguson's, you know, oh, this sounds very, very, very impressive. It's the Imperial College of London. Every time they ran that simulation, they got a different answer, even with the same data. The same data, and you get a different answer each time. It's a random number generator. The University of Edinburgh pointed that out. And, of course, the model itself was wrong, even if they had implemented it correctly. The model was not based on a curve. It was not based on Farr's law, going back to 1840, of every epidemic. The whole idea that there is such a thing as immunity, as natural immunity, that was what they originally meant by herd immunity, that you would have it, a new disease would be very fatal to people who had comorbidities and other health issues. And then as people started to develop real and lasting and permanent immunity, you would start to see that level off and then severely decline because it wouldn't be passed along because you have to be symptomatic in order to pass it along. So that simulation did not have the curve in it. It was a straight line. Every person exposed is going to transmit it to more than two other people. They just came up with that number arbitrarily. They had no idea. But it was they were going to expose it to 2 point whatever number of people forever. Just a straight line. It wasn't a curve. It's a straight line going up forever. And so the number that popped out was 2.2 million people were going to die. And that was the basis of that emergency declaration 606 days ago on Friday the 13th, March the 13th, 2020. And later, as Trump was campaigning in the fall and the number of people who had died with a positive test, not necessarily from it. You know, again, whether you ran your motorcycle into a wall or you got shot or committed suicide with a gun, oh, well, if you tested positive, that's a COVID case. That's a COVID death. And so when Trump was running, he said, I saved 2 million lives. Still pushing these numbers. Well, now we know 2.2 million false positives that have been confiscated. Now, how many of these have already been used? We don't know. Is that an inclusive number? This is coming out of Australia, as a matter of fact, a biotech company in Australia. And I'll just mention again, as we're starting to get close to the time that Bill Gates and George Soros' investment and testing company is about to pay off big time for them, that we had, I think it was in August or September, we had the FDA come out and say, we're going to change the testing. We want something else. And then they quickly moved back and said, well, it's not because the tests don't work. It's because we need to have a test that can test for multiple things out there. We need to be able to test for the flu as well as for COVID. And we got some new tests that are coming out to do that. And then buried in that document, as John Rappaport pointed out, and I've read it to you many times, they said we've got 59 different tests right now, and we can't compare their efficacy to each other because they're all testing for something different. Some of them are testing for a synthesized gene sequence. Some of them are testing for a partial genetic sequence. Some of them are testing for the whole genetic sequence that we told them, but we don't have anything isolated. And so we just told people, you know, hey, here's a genetic pattern we'd like for you to test, and then we'd like for you to magnify it by 1.1 trillion times, with a cycle threshold of 40. You know, you double it 40 times, you get a magnification of 1.1 trillion, which the developer of the PCR test, Kerry Mullis, who won a Nobel Prize for that, that's absolute nonsense to magnify it more than 25 times. So I think was the numbers, 25, 26, somewhere around there. Anyway, they are multiplying it millions of times more than it is supposed to be magnified. And now we see that this thing is doing false positives, and only false positives, not any false negatives. The FDA warned the use of the faulty kits may, quote, cause serious adverse health consequences or death. Oh, how does it do that? Well, because it puts you at the mercy of a mercenary medical system that will give you very dangerous but expensive, profitable drugs such as remdesivir. Remdesivir kills people. It destroys your liver in many cases. And so they'll do things like put you on an invasive ventilator and kill you. But at the meantime, you know, with that false positive test, they get the $13,000 bonus. They get the bonus if they put you on the ventilator. They get to sell you a very dangerous, ineffective drug, remdesivir, for which they can make over $3,000 for a course of treatment, whereas the ivermectin in other countries costs less than $5 for a course of treatment. They can get a 20% bonus for everything that they do to you in the hospital. So, you know, everybody just keep quiet. But this is bad enough that the company is offering an apology. There you go. Offer an apology. Sorry we shut down the world, testing people, magnifying it to a ridiculous extreme, not even having a standard of which we're testing and then magnifying it to a ridiculous extreme. And then, oh, by the way, these kits already came evidently preloaded. We've had reports of that in the past, not just of this company, of many of them. So they offered their apologies for any stress or difficulties customers may have experienced because of a false positive result, quote unquote. They said, we had a higher than acceptable false positive. No false negative results have been detected. Let me repeat that. No false negatives have been detected. In other words, they didn't say that people who had it didn't have it. They were saying that people who didn't have it did have it, get locked up. A person might receive the wrong or unnecessary treatment, including antiviral and antibody therapy. They might suffer additional trauma over having to isolate from family members and friends. Yeah, there you go. Could have life-threatening consequences because, you know, you could get some of their medical treatments profitable, but deadly. I want to do a follow-up. This came out last Saturday, and I've had it on my desk for a while. It's very important. I read to you the account of a man, family, living in Lithuania as the COVID pass came into effect, and these identity papers, please, these Nazi identity papers. And, of course, in Lithuania, they have a very long tradition of authoritarian governments. And they have jumped into this with a new, renewed zeal. You know, they really missed that Stalinism. You know, the Lithuanians were the bodyguards for Lenin. They helped him to stay in power. And so I guess they're missing that. So this is a chance for them to go back to their authoritarian roots. And they have cynically named the COVID pass the opportunity pass. The opportunity pass. And so I wanted to give you an update as to what is happening there, because it was pretty bad when he talked about it a couple months ago. And now this is an update of where they are. Here's also a video that he tweeted out showing people what it looks like in the different retail areas. He said it's week 8 and there's no end planned for this, and it's getting stricter. With no pass, my wife and I may only enter small shops, which mainly sell food, pharma, optics, or farm and pet goods. Without a pass, we are banned by law from every clothing store. Whether it's fashion, sports, kids, punk, wedding dresses, all clothing stores ban us. Even secondhand stores must enforce the banishment. No one may buy or sell without the Mark of the Beast. I'm sorry, the pass. It's not a Mark of the Beast. It's an opportunity pass. That's what it's called. Until mid-October, the law allowed us to buy food and medicine in small shops. Bureaucrats decided this was too lax. 2 weeks ago, they imposed a new restriction on small shops. Either limit capacity to one shopper per 30 square meters, or you will close. And you can ban people without a pass. The bureaucratic rule forced shops to decide save their own business or to ban us from the few remaining shops permitted to us, because they can't afford to remain open if they can only have one person per every 30 square meters. So he says it turns out to be kind of a kill or be killed. That's really what this is, kill or be killed. And so they're succumbing to this pressure. You'll have no more than one person per 30 square meters, you know, one person in your store. And this is for small stores. So it's like you'll have no more than one person in your store at a time. Or you can have a policy where you just flat out ban anybody who doesn't have one of these opportunity passes. He says there's no longer anywhere to buy food without a pass. Supermarkets are already banned us since September. Now small shops are also banning us. So how do we buy food? We buy it online. We go to outdoor markets, or we travel to one of the dwindling number of shops which don't yet ban us. In terms of gas, in order to be able to travel to those shops, 38% of gas stations ban people without a COVID pass. To go to the bank, they'll let you in, but you can only stay for 15 minutes before they kick you out. Undercover plainclothes police are now raiding supermarkets and shopping centers, stopping people to check for their COVID pass and verify that it is a valid pass belonging to that person. And they're doing press releases about their raids. Listen to this. This is pretty amazing. This is them bragging about what they have done. This is from the police. Following a nationwide operation in supermarkets on Friday, police launched 38 pretrial cases into the use of stolen opportunity passes. Officials say they checked around 11,700 people using 200 officers. They operated in shopping centers, checking people who had already passed the initial security check to verify that they did have a pass that belonged to them. I mean, do you understand how this has now become the main focus? Just going to a store? Because this is all about the vaccine, isn't it? It's all about the virus. No, it's not about the virus. It's about the vaccine. No, wait a minute. It's not about the vaccine. It's about the identity pass. And they will still come out and say, oh, these anti-vaxxers, they're just horrible. You know, they're telling people that there's tracking devices in the vaccines. There's no tracking devices in the vaccines, they say. The tracking device is to say that you have to be vaccinated, and that even though we know there is no difference in transmission between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated, it is the raison d'etre for this new medical dictatorship. I mean, what difference does it make? This is what they are doing. They don't need to have something to track you in your blood. That's coming. But they don't need to have something like that. If they're going to do this, have an excuse to create this police surveillance state. The punishment for using somebody else's pass is a fine, an arrest, or imprisonment up to 6 years, and fines are imposed up to 5,000 euros, bragged the police officials. The campaign has also found 21 cases of people not wearing masks in supermarkets, and they were subject to administrative penalties. Police officers wore plain clothes during the operation. This is the private army of dictators and madmen. That's what they have become, these police officers. And he points out, he says, 200 officers in plain clothes to raid stores and malls looking for identity papers. He says that is 25% of all the officers in Lithuania. 25% of the police, I'm sorry, not 2.5%. They'd be pretty lucky if they only had 800 police officers, 8,000 police officers in that benighted country. And, you know, that's part of the problem. We have too many police officers and have had too many police officers for the longest amount of time, and they've been looking for something to do. And now they've got something to do, and they're doing it with a vengeance. And they shouldn't be doing this. If you had fewer police officers, it'd be focusing on legitimate crime, perhaps. Anyway, he said they conducted surprise investigations on 11,700 people. So that's 0.4% of the entire population. So you have 2.5% of the police force going around and inspecting 0.5% of the of a percent of the entire population in one day, he says. So he says, just imagine this. You're in a supermarket, you're pushing your cart through an aisle, and a person in normal clothes suddenly stops you and demands to see your COVID pass and ID. If anything is not in order, you're thrown out, and you face a fine of up to 5,000 euros. That's more than $5,000. And a jail sentence of up to 6 years. And they're running headlines like this. 17-year-old girl arrested for entering a shopping mall. Every day, media publicizes police reports of people who enter stores with a pass belonging to somebody else. He said, this is not education to encourage vaccination. This is a police state. And he's got a sample of the police reports. And I'm not going to read all of them, but it's on a daily basis. Listen to this. October 22nd, three of them, 19-year-old woman, 17-year-old boy were caught walking illegally in a shopping mall without passes. Walking illegally without passes. When I wanted to talk about how we were turning into this with the TSA about 9 years ago, I did a video and I began with a clip from The Great Escape, where you had, after these guys had escaped, they were in civilian clothes, and it was Roger and the guy who was with him. And there is a checkpoint where they're checking everybody's identity papers, but they're doing that on the streets as well. And, I put the sound in there. Your identity papers, please, right? Because that's what they would do everywhere. And that is what this has become. It's absolutely amazing to me. Anyway, that was one, October the 22nd. Here's another one. A 29-year-old man attempted to enter a supermarket with a pass, not in his name. October 22nd again, 36-year-old man presented a pass in the name of a 39-year-old man to enter a gambling parlor. And on. There's multiple of these on a daily basis. He's got dozens of these things. And then, of course, there's the hate that is being pushed by government officials. So here's the senior healthcare advisor to the prime minister who says, the unvaccinated act irresponsibly. Patience is running out. Have I heard somebody say that in the U.S.? Oh, yeah, our own president. You're acting irresponsibly. We've been very patient with you. Patience is over. Now you're going to do what I say. Oh, yeah? You and what army, you pathetic diapered, and I mean top and bottom, Biden. Diapers on his face, diapers on his bottom, and he needs the ones on his bottom. Unvaccinated people shouldn't be given medical services, says a senior health care advisor to the prime minister. We have to restrict their hospitalizations, says the senior health care advisor. Then this is from the Minister of Foreign Affairs. Much of the responsibility falls on them for children whose parents are dead. See, we're murderers. Do not forget to wipe your hands because they are bloody. No, you have blood on your hands. These people have blood on their hands, pushing these toxic injections. Spikevax, that's actually the name that Moderna has on it. Spikevax. That's what's deadly. Not the thing coming out of Wuhan. As a matter of fact, somebody sent me a thing from InfoWars. And I'll talk about some arguments that we should not use. What InfoWars said was that there's a heart attack drug that has been added to the children's vaccine. That's not true. That's not true. The drug in question has been in the Moderna vaccine from the very beginning as a stabilizer. And it just underscores the fact that one of the things that I've objected to vaccines for a long period of time are these additives that they've added. In the same way that tobacco, big tobacco companies put in additives. But, you know, the corporations are putting in additives all the time. You know, they'll put in very dangerous things just because it makes the product look nicer or it helps them to process the product. It's an emulsifier or a stabilizer or whatever. Or it changes the color. You know, hey, it also gives you cancer, but you know, let's not worry about that. They do that kind of adulteration. They've done it to tobacco. They've done it to our food. They do it to our vaccines. That's one of the reasons that I would not have take the old traditional vaccines. After I found that out, I had taken some. But it's also the... My other primary objection was if they've got legal immunity and they don't believe their products are safe, they demand that legal immunity, and the government doesn't believe their products are safe because they gave them legal immunity, then that's all I need to know. And I've been anti-vax ever since I found out about the vaccine court and about the 1986 Act. If you don't believe... If the government doesn't believe their products are safe and they have to give them legal immunity, and if they don't believe their products are safe and they need to have that legal immunity, I'm not going to use their products. But when we talk about things that are added, it's those additions that are very add another level of risk to things. But that particular drug is used to address a secondary issue of heart attacks. It does not prevent heart attacks at all. And... It doesn't mitigate that happening. So it's really kind of a non-issue, first of all. Secondly, by being a stabilizer, that allows them, just as Moderna has not had to ship their vaccines at as low a temperature, it allows Pfizer to ship these kitty vaccines at a higher temperature, not refrigerated as much. So we need to be careful that we don't sensationalize something and that we don't make it, tee this up for the people who want to portray us as lunatics and uninformed. And when you sensationalize something and when you get it wrong and when you make that your central focus, that's what happens with all this. But anyway, going back to this, and I thought of that because I thought of blood on their hands. You know, when I looked at it, how they referred, you know how InfoWars refers to the Trump shots, the Trump juice, the Trump Kool-Aid? You know how they refer to it? The Wuhan coronavirus vaccine. They call it the Chinese vaccine to protect Trump. Isn't that pathetic? You know, it's not, and I like to call it the Trump shot or the Trump juice because it kind of goads the ox of both of these sides of the partisan cheerleaders. You had the people on the left who absolutely hated it because it was Trump juice. It was Trump's shots. It was Trump skipping the testing. They absolutely hated it. And then they just flipped it off like a light switch and said, hey, we love it now. And we're going to mandate it for everybody. When Biden became president, it became his. And then it was automatically baptized and sanctified. And now let's put it out as a religious ceremony. Meanwhile, the people who are the MAGA people, they absolutely hate it. Just like they hate Fauci. And yet Trump defends both Fauci and the vaccine to this very day. And so they have a cognitive dissonance in the MAGA cult. Just like the leftist cult has a cognitive dissonance about this vaccine. It is a great delusion that has been put on all of the people who are partisan cheerleaders. So yeah, go ahead and call it at InfoWars the Wuhan coronavirus vaccine. Okay. Anyway, these are some of the other things that some of the ministers in Lithuania were saying. The mayor of the capital city, Vilnius, and Lithuania is very, very small. We must impose movement restrictions on the unvaccinated. If you want to spend Christmas with your family, you better get vaccinated now. Finally, the Minister of Social Security and Labor. The anti-vaxxers must be held responsible for their share of the loss of human lives we see today. The mainstream media, just as bad, if not worse, bragging about how they love free speech, but we can't have it here. We love free speech, but this is too important. Mainstream media quotes he had, conspiracy theories are flourishing. We will ensure that freedom of speech is guaranteed, but we will not allow lies and public division. We will prevent that. So they'll decide what's true, and they will censor anything that they've decided is not true. That's not free speech. And that's a conspiracy, and there's no theory involved. It's a conspiracy to be to silence this and to keep it concealed. Another outlet says, no longer will conspiracy theories be able to spread. We are living in the golden age of medical and scientific progress, and we should believe what medicine and science say. We are living in a, yeah, that's exactly what we're living in, right? We are living in the golden age of medicine and science. I've never seen anything more ridiculous in my life. This is the dark ages. We have thrown away all of the scientific method and the rest of this stuff. We are not living in the golden age of science and medical progress. We are living in the dark ages, and it's getting darker all the time. And then another mainstream media quote here. This organization said, we join with other media sites by banning comments on COVID-19 articles. Freedom of speech is a fundamental value, but it cannot be abused. Mm-hmm. And we will decide what is true or not. And then they come after him directly. He said the other tactic is, of course, to stigmatize opposition. And that's why we must not add false details to this stuff. Look, the Trump juice is bad enough without adding bogus sensational details to it. Just focus on what it is. So they try to stigmatize people, try to cast doubt on reality. He says, for example, in my case, I wrote that my family cannot print documents because the copy shops require COVID pass. So the state media tells its audience that I'm lying to them. They specifically attacked him. They said the copy centers do not require the pass. And said, we called one of the copy center chains, and it was clear that the opportunity pass is not required there. And he says, well, this one they talked to, Copy Pro, is a very well-known copy center chain in Lithuania. There is a branch of Copy Pro that is located 6 minutes from their headquarters at the state media company. And he says if they wanted to walk down to it, take 6 minutes to walk down, they could have seen this. And he takes a picture of the front of the store, and they have a icon there that shows a QR code icon. And then in the lower right-hand corner, they have a check mark. And it says in Lithuanian, you can only enter inside with a national certificate due to the national state of emergency. That's right. It's always, always about the emergency, isn't it?
Emergency! Everybody to get from street! Emergency! Everybody to get from street!
Хорошо!
Yeah, that's how it works. And that's what they're doing now. Emergency. Everybody to get from city, from grocery store, from copy store, from food store. Emergency. The headline of the article is about me. He said, Twitter users donate money to Lithuanian victim. And he says it's 100% false. Nobody has ever donated anything to me. I've never taken 1 cent from this. And he puts up the post that he's put up there saying, many people have written to offer to help. I'm humbled by this generosity and goodness, but I don't want and will never take any money or donations. I don't want recognition or credit. All I want to do is to spread the message, to defend freedom against authoritarianism. So he says they try to portray anybody that they disagree with. They label them as a conspiracy theorist, and then they call them a greedy money grubber to shame them. I guess the problem is, for these people, that's all they've got. You know, in Lithuania, they don't have multiple skin colors, so they can't call him racist. He said, in my posts, I discuss authoritarianism 25 times, segregation 14 times, freedom 10 times, The media mentions all that zero times. But we can now see with our own eyes the society which the COVID pass has created. So no more doublethink, no more deflection. This is the headline that needs to be written. Lithuania banishes citizens from food, work, clothes, books, toys. Other countries following soon. Other countries are now starting to face the same inevitable reality. And he talks about laws in Eastern Europe. He talks about laws in Western Europe, where the COVID passes are coming in. The Asia-Pacific region. And, of course, this is happening because this is a globalist plan. Everybody is rolling this out at the same time, following in lockstep the demands of Bill Gates, of Klaus Schwab at Davos. In every country, the intention behind the COVID pass is noble, a healthy society. That's what they say. If your goal is to encourage vaccination, then encourage vaccination, and you don't need to include hate. You don't need to ban your neighbors from getting food and clothes and income. You don't need to create an authoritarian society of legalized segregation and intentional disruption, and to do it iteratively. And I won't play that again for you, but remember, that was October 2019, Fauci, when they were talking about how can we roll out something that is untested and demand that everybody in the world take it? Well, we have to do it from the inside, said Fauci. And we have to do it with disruption, and we have to do it iteratively. In other words, step by step, by degrees. He goes on to say, my wife and I wrote this message, this is the last bit here, because we hope to show other people, as individuals, the reality of life in a COVID pass regime. Because remember, this is something the UN, something Davos, all these globalist organizations are doing exactly the same thing. It's red, it's yellow, it's green, and so forth. All of them, everywhere, at the same time. He said, we hope and truly believe that as individuals, we will all recognize the inhumanity, that we'll reject the segregation and the hatred that it creates. So we would be deeply grateful for your help to share this message so that together we can unite to stop this madness before it is too late. As a matter of fact, as he pointed out, you know, this is a worldwide program. Listen to what was said in Australia by one of their government officials.
Oh, they're crazy not to get vaccinated. Life will be miserable without being vaccinated. You won't be able to get any, you won't be able to hide, you won't be able to get a doctor to sign off that you got an exclusion, because there's quite set rules on that, and doctors will be audited to see every one of their exclusions will be looked at very carefully. They'll get fined, they can get struck off. The patients who tell lies can be charged with fraud. There's a whole pile of issues, whole pile of problems if you try and get around the system. It's going to be very hard to maintain your employment if you're not vaccinated. You won't be able to go anywhere for any entertainment. So by all means, get vaccinated. You've got another week where you can get double vaccinated before the 15th to 17th of December, when it's definitely coming in. And there'll be proof that you've been vaccinated, firm proof. You'll be asked to show going into most venues. So get vaccinated, otherwise you're going to have a very, very lonely life and you're not going to be able to maintain your employment.
Yeah,
so we're going to end your employment. You're going to be isolated and lonely. They're going to put you in prison if you don't get vaccinated. We're going to make sure that you are miserable. And if you have any doctors that are going to help you, we're going to take away their licenses as well. I mean, this is just flat-out authoritarianism. I understand this coming from Lithuania, as I pointed out. You know, they've got a long history of this type of thing. But when we look at English-speaking countries, they have a long history of things like the Magna Carta. We used to take people like that official, and at the point of the sword, we would make them sign an agreement, stepping down from their power. That's what needs to be done to him. We need to make his life miserable. We need to incarcerate him. Australia's tyrannical Department of Health has raided an anti-lockdown doctor's office, making good on his threats, and seizing the confidential files of patients. And they put this sign on the door. They said the Victorian government has banned patients from entering the surgery because Dr. Hobart refused to surrender your private and confidential patient files. I mean, these are their private and confidential files, and he refused to give them up. They're trying to make him look, they make themselves look bad. How in the world do they not try to even care anymore, not even try to spin this into something that's justified? They put up a notice that makes this guy out to be a hero. He protected your private confidential files from these people who don't think that you should have any privacy. That's absolutely amazing. So his name is Mark Hobart. He has a surgery clinic. He's been a family doctor for 3 decades, and he's been a big critic of the lockdown. He accused the government of implementing their lockdowns based on irrational data. He's also added that the lockdowns have caused more death than the virus. He's well known for being anti-vaccine, anti-lockdown. He's vocally supported the use of ivermectin to keep people from getting hospitalized, to arrest this at the very beginning. He urged the government to let people use that, to use that instead of the Trump AIDS drugs. You know, it is Trump AIDS. Acquired immune deficiency shot. AIDS. I think my favorite term is Soylent genes. Because that's what this really is. It's based on cannibalism. It's cannibalism that is inherent in the big pharmaceutical testing procedures. And it's genetic modification. So I think Soylent genes fits really well. But we need to understand the source of this. And I want to challenge both the left and the right about their applauding the vaccine or the politician. You know, the vaccine is good or bad based on who is putting it out there for the left. And the right will continue to support the creator of this regardless. This is not a disqualifying thing for them. It's like, how can this not be a disqualifying? This is the biggest thing that has happened not only to this country, but to the world. And it began here. And it began with Trump. And he's responsible for all of it happening. Yes, Fauci was there. And Fauci was given a free hand. And he still defends Fauci. When somebody asks, what is going on with this? You know, Fauci is causing these people to, and the Biden administration, oh, it's not Fauci, it's Biden. It's my political opponent. You should hate him. It's all about partisanship. That's why I push on this so hard. The health department says vaccine exemptions can only be issued to people who meet the criteria. And according to the tyrants in charge, they're concerned that a small number of doctors across Victoria are giving exemptions, as I just played for you. That's the story from Gateway Pundit. The health department, again, put the sign up to demonize him, saying, well, he refused to surrender your private and confidential files, so we shut him down. In Austria, not Australia, but Austria, they now say that the lockdown for the unvaccinated is right around the corner. They've been, you know, well, you just wait. When we get to a certain number of ICU beds that are going to be occupied, we're going to lock the unvaccinated down, except that the vaccine does absolutely nothing in terms of transmission. Walensky has said that at the CDC. The Lancet has said that in the UK. You've even had Bill Gates saying this. The world's most preeminent doctor who has no degree. They're going to, in Austria, they're going to lock down and imprison people who are unvaccinated. This is a scapegoating that is being done now. The demonizing that is being done everywhere against the unvaccinated. They will lock us into concentration camps. That is the plan if we allow this to happen. So they said, a lockdown for the unvaccinated, this is in Austria, is probably unavoidable, quote unquote. Oh, I just really hate to do it. You know, the unvaccinated face an uncomfortable winter. See? Sounds just like Australia. And this is Austria. Because they're all reading off the same Davos UN script. Well, here's some positive news. This is an 8-year-old girl in Florida.
My name is Fiona Lachelle, and I am in second grade at Discovery Key Elementary. I am back to talk to you again today. And for anyone who thinks I didn't write my speech last time is wrong. I wanted to be here then, just like I do now. Sorry if I am supposed to be scared when I see people yelling at these meetings. So I am back today, and tomorrow is my birthday. I am going to get suspended if I don't wear a mask for 3 more days. Just because I get suspended for not wearing a mask isn't going to change my mind. You can keep suspending me. I still have the right not to wear a mask. It is not fair that I'm getting punished because you guys, the school board, are not following the law. That is not fair. It just isn't right. I'm still going to stand up for what I believe in, and nothing's going to change my mind. I've been getting suspended a lot because I'm wearing a mask. Do you know how dirty masks are? Because you touch the mask, you put it on your face, you breathe all those germs in because you have lots of bacteria on your hand. Oh, and okay, yeah, I hope you all go to jail for doing this to me.
I do too. Yeah, let's make that happen.
And my family is proud of me, and my Uncle Murphy that is in heaven is really proud of me, and I want to say Burke sucks, but instead of, your rules suck.
As a school official.
Mr. Berg, you should not become superintendent because you bully me. I have been getting suspended for 27 days, and one of those days they did not give me breakfast. Do you think that's okay? And you think it's okay that you don't have to wear masks? You, the school board, are being a bully to me.
And this is something that the idea, they're not following Florida law. The school board members who defy Florida law, a lot of them
are
maskless all the time, mm-hmm. in situations where they're requiring Fiona to do it. But to keep a child out of school for that long, that's totally unacceptable. And one of the things we'll look to do is give parents recourse so that if their kids are harmed from these out-of-control school boards, right. that they have the ability to vindicate their rights and their kids' rights.
You know what they need to do? They need to go full-on revolution and just leave the school. That's the key thing that needs to be done. I'm glad she's standing up, and I'm glad she's calling them out. But the ultimate act of revolt against this stuff is to leave their institutions, to leave their system. And I'm telling you that they are not going to listen to what we want to do. And to try to reform this system that has been steeped in this rebellion to law and to God for so long, it's just not possible. We need to get out of this system. I'm not a Puritan. I'm a pilgrim. We need to set up our own society in as many ways as we can. And we need to do it as quickly as we can. And who knows? We may be able to purify them by example when their society, they look at their corrupt society. But either way, our first responsibility is to our kids, get them out of these schools, then shut down and defund these schools. So the massive pushback in Australia as well. I read you what these officials are still saying, and yet I don't have a video of it, but it's essentially the same thing that we've seen, yet another instance of this. Tens of thousands of people in Melbourne gathering in front of the Parliament House in Victoria. Very high energy. The person who's writing about this on Lou Rockwell says, even though I have the opportunity to vent nonstop about the COVID war, and that's what it is, it's a war, day in and day out, I was surprised at just how much bottled up emotion and PTSD I still have. And this video made me cry. And it's a video of people getting together, singing, and I showed you a picture of that last week. Everywhere you look, it's just a sea of people, none of them wearing masks, all of them violating these lockdown orders. No more than 30 people, you know, together. Well, probably 30,000 people they had together. Nobody wearing a mask. Now, the daughter of an Australian singer-songwriter who had a hit folk anthem, I Am Australian, led the crowd in a rousing mass performance of the song. As this writer says, it's incredible what a mass expression of patriotism can be like when there's no FBI in the crowd to start violence. There were no police to be seen this time. Remember the last one I did? I guess it was very embarrassing for them. They were so outnumbered, there wasn't anything that they were going to do to the crowd. and you had a former police officer who stood up and turned his back to the crowd and faced the police officers and said, "You need to be ashamed of yourselves for this. When you take the uniform off, you're going to be living under this as well. What are you going to tell your children?" He says, "You're going to tell them that you were the private army for a madman?" Because that's really what we're talking about here. And so I guess they decided this time, it'd be better just not to show up. It was embarrassing enough, even though they had their faces covered with a mask. Semyon Boykov, who is, I think he's an immigrant, calls himself the Aussie Cossack. He said he suspects that the Victorian premier, Dan Andrews, will face the same political fate as Romanian communist leader Nicolae Ceaușescu. He says, "Now, if Dan is listening to this, you better quickly, Dan, seek refugee status. Go to your nearest Chinese embassy or consulate. Maybe the Chinese will take you, because you've obviously been working for them all this time. It seems that Dan Andrews, dictator Dan, has finally succumbed to his own power. He's pushed the people that hard. And it's no longer a question of right wing, left wing. It's no longer a question of race, color, political persuasion. Everybody is out on the streets. And Melburnians, you're doing this for the whole country." See, that's the key. They're pointing out the fact that in this thing, they had a lot of handmade signs attacking politicians and big pharmaceutical companies. They said they had Trump flags. They had LGBT flags. In other words, there's no political division here. Again, it's Trump who gave them the shots. "People have taken to the streets. It's now at a turning point. It's like a runaway train. No longer a handful of construction workers or a few people here and there. It's officially become a huge movement. It's so huge that it reminds me of one of those left-wing sort of movements." He says, "It really is people power. There's not a cop in sight. We've gone from people getting shot in the back as they run away to Melbourne being overtaken. And this Saturday, there's going to be twice as many Melburnians on the street. This is fantastic. Look at that. There's no cops at all. They have given up." Well, you know somebody who hasn't given up? Pope Francis. Pope Francis says the global reset is real and there is no return to normality. Well, we'll see about that, old man. He says, "The reality that we knew before the pandemic was that wealth and economic growth were reserved for a minority, while millions of people were unable to meet the most basic needs and lead a dignified life." Oh, you mean like what is happening in Lithuania? You call that a dignified life? I mean, that was a relatively prosperous area until they started the hatred, the segregation, the authoritarianism. He says, "Return to normal would mean going back to old social structures. Things like nationalism, individualism, isolation," he says. Because why? Because Pope Francis is a globalist. Pope Francis is a collectivist. Pope Francis is a Marxist. And you know who else is not giving up on this? Klaus Schwab. Listen to this old fossil, this old Nazi, when he was talking about what is really fundamentally behind this. This is an attack on our humanity. And I don't mean by that our God-given liberties. Listen to what Klaus Schwab said about the attack on our humanity.
"The difference of this forced industrial revolution is it doesn't change what you are doing. It changes you. If you take a genetic editing, right, just as an example, it's you who are changed. Yeah. And of course, this has a big impact on your identity."
Yeah. "And offers certain kinds of possibilities that have to be careful about. You know, when you began to do that kind of gene editing, some people worry that you are changing what it means to be human."
That's the problem. Of course, the new industrial revolution offers us many opportunities, but it raises many fold questions on the ethical, but even legal implications. And we have to be prepared for it, and that's what we want to do in Davos next year.
Yeah, but you'll have the Pope, and you'll have a lot of leaders, Baptist and Methodist, and every denomination telling you, it's fine. It's a miracle. It's wonderful. They don't see the legal implications of it. They don't see how it is changing your very humanity, but the guy behind it does. Maybe they should pay attention. We'll be right back to talk about some headline news. Stay back. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Hear news now at APSRadioNews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
All right, let's take a look at some headline news on this Friday, the 12th of November, year of our Lord, 2021, day 606 of emergency, emergency. If this was a real emergency, you would be tuning into the emergency broadcasting system, and they would be lying to you at this point in time. So I'm going to tell you the truth about this emergency. Glenn Greenwald, in terms of talking about the Rittenhouse trial, says, I hope you're sitting down for this shocking news. You just had the nation's justice correspondent go on to Democracy Now! This morning and accuse the Rittenhouse judge of being a racist, a biased racist judge, trying to get Rittenhouse a walk. And yes, this is Amy Goodman, Democracy Now! And the headline at democracynow.org, White Supremacy on Trial. That's the one. It's racism, racism, racism. Everywhere there's racism under every rock. And to prove this, they talk about the judge's cell phone going off in court, playing a ringtone for God Bless the USA by Lee Greenwood. And so, of course, we know that if you love America, that is proof that you are racist, that you are evil. Away with him. How dare him? This is automatically a mistrial because this guy does not hate America. Right, he has to approve his creds of hating America. Maybe he should have played, the theme song for the Soviet Union, the Internationale, or whatever, the Marxists. Then he would have been fine, right? And of course, he would have been ruling very differently as well. You have Zero Hedge talks about Bill Ackman, who is a hedge fund manager, interestingly enough, and he's a billionaire hedge fund manager, who I don't know anything about, but they do at Zero Hedge. Anyway, he is somebody who's always been a left-winger. He even identifies as a left-winger. And he took an honest look at this. He said, last night, my wife and I watched several hours of the Kyle Rittenhouse testimony and cross-examination. We came away believing that Kyle was telling the truth, that he acted in self-defense. We found him to be a civic-minded patriot with a history of helping the community with EMT and firemen in training, as an EMT and fireman in training, in his removing hate graffiti earlier that day from a local school, and ultimately in volunteering to protect a business during the night of August the 25th in Kenosha. Our firsthand impression of Kyle, firsthand impressions, were materially different than those that we'd previously formed based on media reports and opinion pieces that we had consumed. I've always been frustrated, he says, to read an inaccurate press report about a subject that I know well, and yet somehow I continue to believe other articles in the very same newspaper about subjects that I know less well. Had that same experience, as a matter of fact. I've seen the way the media has covered things that I've said even before I got involved as a reporter when I was still working with third-party political groups and other subjects that I knew about. But even it's not just subjects I knew about, but what they said and how they mischaracterized what I had to say. I've seen how they have spun and lied about things. And once they do that, you can't unsee that. And I'm really kind of – I'm glad that he said that. But after they did that about subjects that I knew well, they had absolutely no credibility with me on anything else either. But I'm glad that he's starting to understand that liars are going to lie. So it's like they don't have any credibility on the things that you know about. They don't have any credibility on other things either. They've already written their stories. Anyway, he says media and political bias are dividing our country and destroying lives. While we've not heard the entire trial, based on our assessment of Kyle on the stand, we believe that he will be found innocent by the jury. That is, unless they are intimidated by these racists who are threatening to dox them. Anyway, getting back to what this left-wing hedge fund manager said. He said, oftentimes, communities react negatively, even violently, after a jury verdict, when they're surprised by the outcome, based on what they have previously read in the newspaper, seen on TV, or more likely been served on social media. So, and this is why he's writing this, he doesn't, the guy is obviously not guilty. He's obviously operating in self-defense, Rittenhouse. And so it's very likely he's going to be found innocent by the jury. And yet, these people who are pushing this racist narrative are really stoking a fire. And this is going to have real results. And this is why he's writing this. I encourage you to watch the trial, or at a minimum, his testimony and his cross-examination, before you form a view of his guilt or innocence. With respect to my own political bias, I'm not a gun owner. I'm not a member of the NRA. On balance, I support stronger gun regulations and removing loopholes in the sale of guns. Unfortunately, it seems that society's view of Kyle's innocence depends more on one's view about gun control rather than what actually took place last August. Kyle Rittenhouse's life is at risk. Justice demands a fair trial. Society would benefit greatly if politics did not enter the courtroom and convict innocent people. And so Zero Hedge says, well, you might think that it'd naturally end at that point in time, right? But they said he had one more tweet, and that really sums up everything. After he wrote what I just read to you there, he had one more tweet, and he said, I just got a call from the media asking if my Twitter account had been hacked. The reporter couldn't conceive of the idea that I could believe that Kyle is innocent because I am not a right-winger. Crazy, he said. Yes, it is crazy. But that's where we are at this point in time. That's exactly where we are. So when we look at the infrastructure, we have Politico saying the GOP is wrestling with the infrastructure vote backlash. And when I saw that, I thought, Politico is talking about how people are going to be upset about Republicans supporting this because Mitch McConnell and many Senate Republicans supported it. And you had 13 Republicans in the House who supported it. And quite frankly, I think that's worthy of a backlash if you understand what is in this. I've talked about the other things that have nothing to do with infrastructure that are part of resetting and turning our society upside down. They're not interested in doing anything to support any private transportation, cars. They want to outlaw and eliminate cars. And we know that they're not going to offer us even any alternative because these people can't. They're so corrupt, so inept. The corruption is so bad. They can't build highways. They can't build railroads anymore. I just look at all these different projects. You could never build the interstate system with this kind of corrupt government that we have today. They can't get these projects, these bridges and tunnels that they try to do. They go on, and they take three or four times the allotted time, and they wind up costing more than 10 times what they had anticipated, and you're still not done. So they're not going to build anything new, but they are going to use this to literally deconstruct roads and bridges, calling them racist. And they have many other things in there, like the attacks on crypto, the new rules about crypto, the army of IRS agents, and a lot of other things like that that have absolutely nothing to do with infrastructure unless you're setting up an infrastructure of Marxism and authoritarianism. And yet the GOP voted for that. You had Mitch McConnell supporting that. And so Politico says, well, now it would seem that the Republican Party is against bridges and roads. Well, I would say they are if they voted for this bill. But that's not what they mean. What they're doing is they're attacking the people who oppose this horrible bill, not the people like Mitch McConnell who sold out to it. The ferocity of the reaction against the 13 House members who voted with Democrats on the House-passed infrastructure bill appeared to signal a new stage in the party's evolution, marking the GOP as so reflexively anti-Biden that even spending on infrastructure is too radioactive to support. No, this is deconstructing infrastructure that is supposedly racist. This is not about enabling choice and freedom. It's not really about building infrastructure. It has nothing to do with that. Mitch McConnell will not be going to the White House signing ceremony. He's ashamed of it, you see. He'll do it, but he doesn't want to have his picture taken there. And this is not about hating Biden so much. Biden clearly does hate our country. I mean, he's putting in a, he wants as a comptroller of the currency, somebody who is a literal Leninist. I went to a Stalinist university and wants to completely overthrow our system of government. Doesn't even hide the credentials like Buttigieg does. Buttigieg is a Marxist as well. All these people in the Biden administration are hardcore Marxists. It's not hyperbole to call them communists. They are literally communists. They've literally spent their life in academia talking about how they can centralize control of everything under themselves and doing it using the rhetoric and the lies of Marxism. McConnell is one of 19 Senate Republicans. There's 50 Senate Republicans. So you've got 38% of the Republicans in the Senate voted for this bill. The House passed the bill last week with the support of 13 House Republicans. McConnell said the bill is basically written in the Senate by a bipartisan group, and I think it was good for the country, and I'm glad it passed. Yeah, we need to pass on Mitch McConnell. Anyway, when asked if any Senate Republicans would support the Democrat spending bill, he says it's not something we ought to be doing. We've spent quite enough time this year, and it's time to stop spending. So he's going to hold the line on this next multi-trillion dollar bill. Yeah, good for him. Yeah, you think you can trust him to do that? A bipartisan Senate group led by Rob Portman and Kyrsten Sinema put this together. They say in this report from Politico, conservatives accusing their GOP colleagues of helping to pave the way for a separate spending bill that's being pursued by the Democrats. Ted Cruz said, look, it was crazy in the Senate for about 2 months. We had massive arguments over this bill. I mean, people screaming arguments at lunch. He did vote against this bill. And then Babylon Bee has a satire piece. They show cars going down an multi-lane interstate with an overpass coming across over the top. And it says, racism. Can you spot all the signs of racism in this ordinary picture of a highway? We found 177 incidents of racism. First of all, we have a symbol that is a diamond-shaped symbol. This has got to be a Nazi rune. Remember when they did that with the, a Republican convention or something that they did? All of these drivers likely have IDs. Everybody knows that black people don't know how to get ID, so this is Jim Crow all over again. They go on to say, the road that's being trampled on continuously is what color? Black. Well, because, of course, it's going to be black. And those white markings that are there are used to keep marginalized people in line. This is shameful. A really tall black man would not be able to walk under this bridge. It was obviously built by racists. And as ridiculous as that sounds, that was actually said by Pete Buttigieg. Well, you know, we have bridges that are so low that people of color who are riding in a bus can't get under that bridge in order to get to the beach. So that's what I'm talking about when I talk about racist infrastructure. Are you kidding me? Where's the, this guy, Pothole Pete from Indiana. You have Biden going to people who are the antithesis of what they're supposed to be leading. So you go to a mayor who is famous for the potholes in his little town, and you make him head of the Department of Transportation. You go to somebody who is famous, who's written papers, who graduated from a Leninist, Stalinist university, writing papers about Marxism, anti-capital, you make her head of the comptroller. This is what Biden has done everywhere. So yeah, the whole thing about, oh, well, these bridges are racist because they're not tall enough. Yeah. And finally, do you see any public transportation here? Of course not, because it's all racist. Let me talk a little bit about something that I think is very hopeful. Not that our future is based on celebrities. You know, we had Ed Asner, who just recently died. He had been involved for quite a while with the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Truth. But there's a lot of different committees that have looked at what happened on 9/11 and said, well, that's simply not possible. The official government story is simply not possible. As Arthur Conan Doyle put it, in the words of Sherlock Holmes, he said, well, you eliminate what is not possible, and then what remains, no matter how improbable, is the truth. And so although Ed Asner has passed on, William Hurt has now associated with a new film that is coming out by architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. So we've had lawyers who've looked at this. And again, I've talked to the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Truth several times, particularly about their reopening of the investigation into the anthrax attacks. Because you should understand how what is happening to us right now is intricately tied in. I won't go into the connections yet again. I do it frequently enough. But how it is all tied together from the very beginning to 9/11. The Model State Health Emergency Powers Act and so forth. And the practicing and the simulation, you know, began not with Event 201 in 2019. It began in 2001 with Dark Winter, 2 months before it all happened. But there's a lot of different groups that are looking at 9/11. I mean, we've had pilots for 9/11 Truth saying, well, the planes can't fly that speed at that altitude, and many other things that they've pointed out. You've had architects who've pointed out the issue. You've had other people doing investigations. As a matter of fact, the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth commissioned a study that was done by the University in Alaska, and I think it was University of Alaska, but they commissioned a study. They were very detailed to go back and look at the NIST report about the so-called collapse of the building and pointed out how structurally that was not possible. They funded the models to be done and so forth, and I'm assuming that that is what's going to be in this new documentary. And so this isn't true or false because a celebrity says so. But celebrities do have a lot of influence. And I see this as encouraging simply because as a human being who has different political views than I do, somebody like William Hurt would look at this objectively and be concerned about getting to the bottom of the truth and to not be concerned about the bricks that are going to be thrown at him. And the bricks have already started coming at him by people in the industry. He talks about how he's born back in 1950. His mom moved to New York City in 1955. He said, I was always a New Yorker. I watched the towers going up in 1971. He said, we were told many times by our mother, she had mentioned when she was growing up, how on a foggy July day in 1945, a B-25 had flown into the Empire State Building during the war. And so he said, in 1978, I was watching as the antenna was being attached to the North Tower. I remarked to my first grade buddy that somebody sure could run into those big things. But he said, on the day of the attack, he was in Boston with his eldest in a cafe having breakfast. And he saw it on the little TV that was hanging on the wall. And he said, being a general aviation pilot myself, my first thought was, that's not a small plane, and that's not an accident. And then he said, when the second plane hit, I started thinking about those who were lost, the massiveness of it. And he talks about how this just continued to percolate with him. He had contracts for films they had to shoot. He said, to his surprise, they were allowed to continue to go on. But he said he had moments when he was doing the filming where he just kind of spaced out because he was so focused on the personal tragedy of this. And he said that stayed with him for years. But he said about a week after this, he said he was back in New York. And he said, by sheer coincidence, there we were filming on location in New York City. Prior to 9/11, a reservation had been made for us to stay at a hotel 12 blocks north of Ground Zero. He said, I asked the elevator man as we first went up to the room if he had lost anyone close. Surprised and instantly in tears, he said, yes, my uncle. He was the window washing machine's overseer. He never missed a day. He said, off my room, there was a patio, and I could look down the avenue and see the site smoldering in the night lights. In horror, I knew what it was partly made of. We all did. But what I didn't know at the time was that thermite keeps burning for a very, very long time. At night, I'd go down, and they'd let me through the barrier because I was recognized, and I would talk to and hug the first responders. He said, this whole thing never left me. The discrepancy, the difference between the story that we were told to believe and its impossibility. So he tells all of that to say why it never left him. And he said, I felt alone until 2013. Then I just couldn't stand it anymore, and I started digging for truth in the rubble of the official lie. Then, in another heavier layer of rubble that lay in my own mind that was installed there by our mass media. It took a while, but I finally found pieces of evidence online. Mixed in among the nonsense, there was a sane and reasoned evidence. One of the sources, the strongest one by far, a source that was supported by thousands of responsible, honest, honorable, grounded, normal, respectful people, professional architects and engineers all around the world. And that was Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. An amazing act of courage and compassion meets us there. When we can bring ourselves to seek answers. So why did I wait so long, he says. This is John Hurt. Why did I wait so long? He said, to start digging, it astonishes me until I look at the size of what happened and also at my inability to believe that my government could have betrayed the families of those killed that day by not giving them the first thing they owed, the truth. William Hurt. It relieves me immensely to have given my name and my artistic advice as an executive producer of the new film, The Unspeakable. I also deeply respect the definitive film, Seven, about the other building that so few know of, that also somehow fell neatly, smack straight into its own socks that day, an impossibility in any way but one. Now, what he means by seven, by building seven, that was the building that was not even hit by a plane, not even hit. This new film, The Unspeakable, is about a horror that was committed upon innocent people and about their friends and their loved ones struggling to heal while the truth is suppressed by those that we are supposed to be able to trust. Which, by the way, is why I could never really trust Giuliani. Why I was not surprised when we found out that we could not trust Trump. Giuliani, Trump's close confidant, as everything was smoldering, as he pointed out, it was very important for them to rush in and to cart away any evidence, even to the extent of taking people's lives by not waiting for the proper masks to be used. How ironic that as the entire world was being forced to mask up, or the entire nation was being forced to mask up by Fauci under Trump, and we were misdirected, weren't we, to be focused on a corrupt election, as if that were something new. While the guy who took the lead on the misdirection, Rudy Giuliani, had been involved in another cover-up. He had been involved. So while we were all masked, the guy who did not have people masked, the people who died and are still dying from the dust that they inhaled, so that he could cover this up, he was involved in this grifting operation because, as I said, nobody was doing anything with the massive amounts of money that they raised, $250 million, $250 million they raised, and they didn't do anything to contest the election. It was just a steal. That's what it was. It was, they didn't stop the steal. They started the steal. And so, as he said, as William Hurt said, it was a real relief to finally put my name to this and to stand for what I know is true against what I know is false. And so for that, he is immediately attacked. These articles you'll find on the Drudge Report. Showbiz 411, as is Roger Friedman, a film critic, who talks about his statement. And he said, these people are completely crazy. That's his take of it. This is a film critic saying that the architects and engineers and the people at who are also architects and engineers that did the studies, did the simulations, put all this stuff together, they don't know what they're talking about. So you should listen to this film critic, this guy, Roger Friedman, because anybody that disagrees with the government is completely crazy. If you disagree with the government about climate, telling everybody that we're all going to die, if you disagree with them about the pandemic, or if you disagree with them about the vaccine, and on and on and on, oh, you're completely crazy. You need to be shut up. And that's one of the things that makes me optimistic about this, is that William Hurt would not be intimidated by that. That's the world in which we live. You'll be called and every kind of name. You'll be shamed. You'll be vilified. And he stood up against that for what he knows is true. And he did it because of his compassion, not just for truth, but the people who have been lied to, who have been hurt. And I don't think he even understands the full extent of how this is tied together with everything that is happening now. I may be wrong. I don't know. I haven't talked to him. I'd like to talk to him. Here is William Hurt, who, says the film critic, who won an Oscar in 1985. And now he's in his 70s, and he's lost his mind. If anything, he's become the character in the Mindbender Altered States from 1980. He says, these people are crazy. They also think that we're being tracked by the vaccine. See how he subtly introduces a spin, a lie to that? We're being tracked to push us to get the vaccine. They're using the vaccine as an excuse to track us. How in the world can he miss that? Well, he probably doesn't. He goes on to say, I'm not going to link to the film or to the website of these kooks. This is what it's come to, kids. Well, again, if you want any information about science or engineering, medicine, climate, any of that kind of stuff, don't listen to a film critic. Don't listen to the mainstream media. Do your own research. Violent airline passengers are being fined more than $200,000 by the FAA, brags CNN. Now, this is not a $200,000 fine to one person. They have put out fines totaling $225,287. They have proposed more than $1.45 million in fines against passengers who are accused of acting out. So it's going to get much bigger. The FAA fined a Southwest Airlines passenger more than $26,000 for allegedly punching a flight attendant. They say the FAA does not have the power to prosecute criminal cases, only to assess civil fines up to $37,000. See, that's the key. If they can give you, where did they come up with this number, $37,000? Right? We have in the Constitution, the Eighth Amendment, we have a prohibition against excessive fines. And if somebody is punching people, getting violent, that is a criminal offense. And, you know, you do something about that. But if you're not wearing a mask and you talk back to the little hall monitor flight attendant, I'm going to turn you in. You know, and you talk back to that person. Are they, should they be allowed to give you a $26,000 fine or up to a $37,000 fine? Because these are civil fines. They're not criminal. They're civil fines, which means, as I pointed out many times, just like we've seen with so-called civil asset forfeiture, they can take your property without a conviction. They can take your property without even charging you with anything. And you have no presumption of innocence, you have no trial, and you have no protection against excessive fines. Who comes up with $37,000? So it's just totally arbitrary. That's one thing that we ought to be speaking out against. They go on to defend this on CNN, and they talk to the FAA administrator, Steve Dixon, who said, it really does require the cooperation of all those private sector stakeholders. Oh, yeah. This is about the corporatocracy, the corporations who are deputized as co-conspirators to take away people's due process. Look, I have no problem with somebody if they get angry and violent and they punch somebody, fine. You know, do a criminal, you know, refer them to the FBI, do a criminal prosecution of that person, but give them a trial. Give them a trial. Don't go in and say, well, I can take up to $37,000. Well, why not take up $1 million from somebody? It's been crazy. Turkey shortages, supply chain issues everywhere. Well, you know, where we don't have a shortage of turkeys or other things is in Washington, right, in government. This is, I think, kind of a sign of where we are. You know, one of the ways that people coped in Stalinist Russia was just dropping out of society with vodka, right? Oh, yeah, let me just get drunk and I won't have to pay any attention to where I am. You know, it was kind of their alcohol version of the metaverse that Facebook wants to put in. But I think this is a sign of the times. We have Arby's, the fast food restaurant, launching 80-proof vodka that tastes like French fries. So there you go. You may not be able to get the fries at Arby's. You may not be able to get the meat at Arby's. You know, we've had McDonald's is out of fries and other things I've heard. I don't eat there, so that's what I've heard. So you may not actually be able to get the Arby's or the French fries, but, you know, you can drown your sorrows and drop out of society by getting French fry flavored vodka. And that's not the only one that they have. That's curly fry vodka. I guess it'll curl your toes. I don't know. And then they also have crinkle fry vodka. It comes in two French fry tastes. And and of course, the question is, are they going to be selling these in the Arby's restaurants? No, they're not. They're not going to get a liquor license for all these different places. So you can buy it online at arbysvodka.com. This reminds me a few years ago, we were laughing about it. I had a son who loved Burger King, and it came out limited time only. It was a Burger King burger clone or something like that. And so we thought that was so funny when we saw it, we were going to get it, but they were already sold out. We were going to get it as a joke gift. So, you know, we're not just having a shortage of French fries and other things. There are shortages of over 100 different types of drugs as well. And the reason I mention this is because at the very beginning of this, when I was talking about the insanity of a lockdown policy that was being pushed by the Trump administration, by Fauci in charge of the Trump administration, and these governors who had been enabled with the emergency, everyone must get into the house. I said at the time, regardless of what this is, let's talk about the worst case scenario, that this is a bioweapon designed in China, deliberately spread around the world. Well, let's assume that. That's the very worst case scenario going back 606 days ago. I said, if that's the case, the worst thing we could do would be to cripple our food supply, to cripple our hospitals, to cripple our drug manufacturing, to cripple everything. You know, when you, and that's why on that following Monday, I said, when Winston Churchill and Britain were facing the Germans right across the English Channel, did they hunker down and say, oh, that's it, let's go hide? No, no, no. When you have a situation like that, you double down. And you have to defend your liberty, but you also have to keep society going. You know, they were doubling down on manufacturing and storing stuff and on supplies. I mean, you started, same thing was happening in the U.S., the arsenal of democracy. You start ramping up what you're going to have to do. And so now here we are, as they've been throwing monkey wrenches now for 606 days into the supply chain. We're at the point where food is getting more expensive. Things are disappearing everywhere now, including drugs. Because, you know, this is about a medical emergency. And so now we're at the point where we're going to not have drugs. We're going to shut down the hospitals simply because people haven't gotten the vaccine. Yeah, makes completely good sense, doesn't it? Revolver has a story about the move to destroy anonymity online. And they were correct to spot the quick move that happened in the UK after we had an individual who was brought in as part of their open immigration policies, who killed a member of parliament, stabbed him multiple times in a church. And so the response of the government there immediately was to say, well, what we need to do is eliminate anonymity online. Now, how is that connected to it? Oh, well, you know, he was weaponized online. And so even though he was a son of a Somali Marxist politician who was brought into the country, you know, just like Ilhan Omar is the daughter of a Somali Marxist politician, very high in both of them, very high in that former government in Somali. And they were Marxists. And so that's not the problem, though. It's not that we bring in people like Ilhan Omar and this murderer, terrorist, who absolutely hate our country. That's not the problem. The problem is that you're able to have anonymity online. That's what has to be destroyed. It's a complete non sequitur, quite frankly. But it makes perfectly good sense if you understand the fact that the BBC had already partnered for quite some time with Microsoft and with other companies for the C2PA. That is, I prefer to call it the CCPA, because using the letters of the Chinese Communist Party really shows you what this is about more than anything else. It's the Coalition for Content Provenance and Authenticity, or authentication or whatever. But I think you should really understand the A as authorization, because they want to be able to identify everybody, to remove all anonymity. And so they put together a coalition of Microsoft put together a coalition of CPU creators, of Adobe and other people who have the software that is used to create documents, whether they are audio, video, pictures, or even the people that are going to be there to create, you know, things like PDFs and stuff like that, written documents. So everything, whether it's written, whether it's a picture, whether it's audio, whether it's video, any of that, they will work with the software creators, the software companies that have the software apps, as well as the CPU manufacturers, to mark that so they know who that came from, so they can purge it. And, of course, part of that coalition is the media, like the BBC, like the New York Times, who are going to be the ones telling them, saying what is true and what is not, so they can stop anything from, and it's not just opposing a particular issue. This will take it from issues that you're not allowed to talk about to people who are not allowed to talk. And we've already had the beginnings of this with the censorship at YouTube that I've been fighting since 2013. The reason that Revolver talks about this is because it's also coming, surprise, surprise, to the United States. Congressman John Curtis of Utah, a Republican, began circulating draft legislation that would entirely abolish anonymity on social media platforms. While most of the government efforts to end online anonymity have been widely covered in the media, America's recent proposals have managed to stay out of the spotlight. But despite flying under the radar, these proposals do exist in the discussion draft that was introduced by Congressman John Curtis in May. The discussion draft aims to, quote, require a provider of a social media service to verify the identity of users of the service and for other purposes, unquote, and to prevent anybody from creating a social media account without verifying their identity. In Australia, lawmakers have also created what they ironically call the Online Privacy Act to take away all online privacy in the same way that the Patriot Act was not patriotic, but I think it was honest in the sense that their targets, as we see now, are patriots. Always was intended to do that. So now we see that the Patriot Act wasn't a cynical mislabeling. We see that it was actually true. In Austria and Spain, same things are happening. It's all rolling out worldwide. And interestingly enough, guess what? You had the BBC and you had Microsoft at the very center of this coalition to push this thing up. That's the thing that needs to be talked about. They don't seem to be aware in this Revolver article of the C2PA at all. But what you have is always a situation where you have the globalist putting together, because this is a technocracy, this enslavement that they're trying to set up, this global regime. So you'll have them building the technological foundation for the surveillance and police state, the Big Brother state. And then you will have people, usually it'll be somebody who you don't suspect, who you think is on your side, you know, like a Republican from Utah or a Republican president like Trump or somebody like Richard Nixon. You don't suspect these guys, and so they can roll, or George W. Bush, he can roll a Patriot Act through, right? Oh, but he's a conservative, he's on our side, right? So that's the thing that works very well for them, to be able to roll these things out. And so they'll look for anything, even if it doesn't really have a connection to what happened. And they'll use that to push this through. Their comment at Revolver is, with the power of modern artificial intelligence, tech-driven censorship can extend even beyond simply deleting Twitter accounts or suppressing links to Hunter Biden's sex tape. It will also include the power to effectively destroy the right to anonymous speech online. And again, if you understand Microsoft's C2PA, you realize they don't even need to have artificial intelligence. It will just be right there. It will be your internet passport, just like they want to have a vaccine passport. They will put your identity marker on everything that you do. We have a pro-family leader who has called out the chairwoman of the GOP, the RNC, the Republican National Committee. Rona McDaniel is the niece of Mitt Romney. And she is head of the RNC. And she was at this event that I talked about at Mar-a-Lago that was presided over by Melania Trump to embrace, to elevate the LGBT group, the log cabin Republicans, and to even go further. Rona McDaniel, again, chairwoman of the RNC, wants to have within the GOP a pride coalition, And so you have some conservatives who have pushed back, some Christian groups who pushed back against this. What she said there at Trump's Mar-a-Lago with Melania Trump, Rona McDaniel, said, "We're going to reach out to homosexual Republicans because they, quote, enrich the party with, quote, unique perspectives." She said, and here's the quote, the full quote, "Conservatives in Log Cabin," the homosexual Republican group, as I pointed out, that's the conservative homosexual group within the Republican Party. And out of that, you had the really radical LGBT mob that called itself the Lincoln Project. That was where its origins were. But anyway, these are the people who are more moderate. Homosexuals who are more moderate in the Log Cabin. They said, "Conservatives in Log Cabin don't just share our vision for a free, secure, and prosperous America," said Rona McDaniel. "They enrich it by adding unique perspective to our party and recruiting even more diverse candidates and supporters to join our cause." So I guess my question is, what are we trying to conserve? If this is conservative, what are we trying to conserve? Are we trying to conserve family? Are we trying to conserve? And this is where this all fits, as I pointed out, being done by Trump, who is very proud of his sins. He's not homosexual, but he's very proud of his sins. He's bragged about it for a long time. Are we proud? Are we to be proud now of our sin? Whatever it is, whether it's homosexual, heterosexual, of sexual depravity, are we to be proud of that? Are we supposed to be proud of our rebellion to God? Is that what it means to be conservative? Because let me say to you that that's not going to conserve our nation. God will destroy our nation for that rebellion. So Tony Perkins said, I think it's time for her to take up something else and leave the party to those who think, who I think can chart a path forward, restore what's been lost, and make sure Republicans, the conservatives, regain the majority, both in Congress and continue to see victories in states across the nation. Well, quite frankly, as I've said many times, I don't see much in any of our institutions that needs to be conserved. And these people are not trying to conserve any of the things that built our nation. He said, I think she needs to step down. She's outlived her purpose in the RNC. If the Republicans get this wrong, they become the Democrat-lite party. And I think they begin to lose immediately because Republicans disproportionately get their support from social conservatives. They have to be mindful of that. And they have to continue to advance a values platform that is consistent with the traditional values that made America great. Made America great. And you have Trump, who, as I point out, is very proud of all this. Tiffany Trump, as a matter of fact, has said back in just before the election of 2020, she said, I know what my father believes in. Prior to politics, he supported gays, lesbians, the LGBT community, she said. She forgot to mention that he also supported Jeffrey Epstein. You know, he's friends with people like that. You know, the minor attracted person, Jeffrey Epstein, otherwise known as a pedophile. Yeah, he was, very much embedded in that community, Donald Trump was. He was very proud of his sin. He was very proud of the fact when he threw his first wife under the bus so he could marry Tiffany's mother. But he didn't just, that was the thing about it. You know, when they did First Wives Club, it wasn't just that he divorced her to run off with somebody else. He went out of his way to humiliate her, just as he does people that he eventually fires. It's not enough to send somebody out. He has to humiliate them and rub their noses in it. And that's what he did to Ivanka Trump. Ivana Trump, or whichever one. I get their names mixed up. I know about the Trump family more than I want to know, unfortunately, but not everything about them, their names. But I even want to talk about what Tony Perkins says. When we talk about what we're focused on, do we want to, is the Republican Party the thing that's that important? Aren't there values that transcend the parties? You know, this partisanship in it, the way that we talk about quote-unquote social conservatives, or the way we talk about quote-unquote values or traditional values. Tony Perkins has a Christian organization. He said this on Todd Starnes' radio program. It's like, why can't you just use the name? The name. Are you afraid of the name? Are you afraid to name the name of Christ, of Jesus, because it's not politically accepted? Are you ashamed of that, Tony? We don't need to talk about a values platform. We don't need to talk about traditional values. We need to value Christ. Now, that's the amazing thing to me about all of this. Marjorie Taylor Greene spoke about this. She had the right thing to say. She said using people for their identity is what Democrats do, not Republicans. Exactly right. And then you had a Catholic, Matt Walsh, who was a commentator, and he was attacked by Rick Grenell, who is the former director of national intelligence. He was the one, the homosexual, open homosexual that Trump appointed, and he was very proud of appointing him as director of national intelligence. And General Flynn is very much involved in virtue signaling about this kind of stuff as well. Had a former Navy SEAL who was a transgender probably about 5 years before he started getting involved with the people in the Trump crowd. So Rick Grenell attacked Walsh because Walsh said Trump hosted and attended an event over the weekend where the GOP unveiled its new RNC Pride Coalition, he said. If the Republican Party is going to fully embrace leftist sexual identity politics, then it officially serves no purpose. And so Rick Grenell, the virtue signaling appointment by Trump, said, yes, criticizing leftist sexual identity politics is, quote, from the Stone Age. And he said, in order to prove that we are modern and hip, I'm sorry, he called him Stone Age, and that was Matt Walsh's reply. Yeah, to criticize leftist sexual identity politics is from the Stone Age. So when he said that, if they're going to play identity politics, they serve no purpose. And so Rick Grenell says, well, his views are from the Stone Age. And actually, he's right. You know, the Ten Commandments and other things like that were written in stone. Remember that? So, yeah, the tablets of Stone Age. That's where he's from. That's where I'm from, too. Is it true that COVID-19 vaccines are created using the organs of aborted infants? That's the headline of LifeSite News article. And as I said earlier in the program, I think it's important that we get things right. You have to be careful to get things right, to not mix in error, because the other side is waiting for us to mix in sensational error in what we talk about. And so we must never do that to be sensational, because it will come back to bite us and to discredit people. And that's how, and so I don't want to get that wrong. And, you know, I've talked about the fact that it's not just the cell lines, but we have to also look at how they obtain those cell lines, and we also have to take a look at what they're currently doing now, still ongoing, which is even more obvious to people. It isn't something that just happened once back in 1963, No. It's a current ongoing thing of the pharmaceutical industry. Now, that's not to say, and I want to stress this, that's not to say that humanized mice were used to test or to develop or to manufacture. And testing is where they use the humanized mice. They don't use them to manufacture. It's not like they've got Pinky in the Brain there running the machine, you know. but the humanized mice that they use, and the way that they humanize them with the organs freshly harvested of babies that they have to abort alive, it is premeditated murder. That's what we need to understand. That is the ethics of the big pharmaceutical companies. Not to say, though, that they'd necessarily use that for these particular drugs, but just understand where these people are coming from. So make that distinction. But they write an excellent article, yet another article. I think still the best one that I have seen is the one by John Rappaport, where he talks about the people who created the 1963 cell line, as well as the people who are doing this ongoing research, and they talk about it from a standpoint of how it is essential for them to take the lives of these babies in order to get the parts that they need. Otherwise, the parts are damaged, destroyed, or dead when they get them to a degree that they can't use them. And so what LifeSite News says, when we first heard about the experimentation on human embryos and fetuses many years ago, many of us were incredulous. Some people still can't believe it. It is difficult to imagine the perversion of the human heart, which justifies the use of vital organs of infants, even if the intention is to help others. To use another human being is nothing less than to instrumentalize that person, to turn them into an object to be used and discarded like a dirty rag. This is why I call it cannibal pharmaceuticals, Soylent Genes. And it's why I played for you yesterday that back and forth between the Louisiana congressman and some people that he was trying to get them to say, you know, okay, so at what point does a baby become a human? And they just would not answer that. You know, well, is it a particular age? Because we had the Supreme Court come in with Roe v. Wade and say, well, you know, we're going to say that at a particular age, you can no longer do the abortion. But he says, so is it partial birth abortion, where you kill a baby that is full term? Is it, you know, we all agree that, don't we? Can I get you to agree that we would not kill toddlers? Well, we've got a lot of ethicists who are saying, no, we should be able to do post-birth abortions. And that's what a lot of these people are doing. And, of course, she just, nothing mattered. Life did not matter to her. Only her freedom to take life. That's all that mattered to her. And I wanted you to see that, just to see who these people are. But they go on to say, in the medical field, it's necessary to be aware of the steps required to arrive at a successful outcome. And so they go through a great deal of detail as to how that happens. And again, making the case that is really strongly made by John Rappaport in his article. But they say another misconception is that organs are salvaged after the abortion. And that was what I read to you yesterday. And I said, that's not true. That was a lie that was being pushed out by Francis Collins. He identifies as a Christian. He tells people he is a devout Christian. And he says, well, if we've got some organs that are sitting over here in the trash can, they're just going to be thrown away. Maybe we could repurpose that and use it. Well, that's not at all what's happening. That is a bold-faced lie. Let me tell you, somebody who is in the position that Francis Collins is in, he knows better than that. He knows better than that. He is operating in the medical field. He's operating in medical science. There is no way that he's that naive. He's flat out and straight up lying to you about that. He is a deceiver. He has been a part of this from the get-go, and he, along with Fauci, have been the ones continuing this gain-of-function research even when it was prohibited. Francis Collins was very instrumental in continuing the research in American universities. When the Congress had said, don't fund that anymore, he continued to do it, and he was defiant about it. He, along with Fauci, was responsible for moving research to China in order to evade that prohibition from Congress. He is a very deceptive, criminal, evil person. Evil. Anyway, they go on to say, there is a misconception that the organs are salvaged after the abortion. Although this is in itself a heinous crime, the harvesting of organs for medical research is far more premeditated. Here's an excerpt from a 2015 publication. They say the fetal material provided by the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology in Yunnan Hospital, with legal and ethical agreements from the donator, before the study, we made strict, comprehensive inclusion criteria. They looked at the background of the parents. They wanted to make sure that they were careful about how they induced labor, a particular way to induce labor to preserve the baby, right? Make sure the baby's not harmed until they can get the organs. And on and on. The tissues from the freshly aborted fetuses were immediately sent to the lab for the preparation of the cells, as they pointed out in their documents. Several infants of gestational age of 2 to 4 months were screened. They were picked for their gender, race, and medical history. The date of the abortion is chosen. Labor is induced in a particular way. The organs are extracted while the child is alive. The cause of death is removal of organs by vivisection. This is why I say we rightfully are disturbed by what these madmen are doing unnecessarily to puppies, the torture that they do. But do you realize they're doing that to human babies? Do you care? So they say labor induction will be used to obtain the tissue. We record the time on our samples, and we take steps to keep it at a minimum to ensure the highest quality biological specimens. We get feedback from our users. We utilize this feedback to tailor our collection processes. These are the people who are the hired killers for the FDA, for the NIH. And so they point out that the organs have to remain at body temperature. They have to make sure that they keep them at body temperature even after its blood supply has been cut. That's why the fetus is delivered alive, and it's why the organs are extracted with no anesthesia. They don't want to harm the organs. They do it while the heart is still beating, while the blood is still circulating, and that's why you had, in that Center for Medical Progress trial, you had under cross-examination a woman who said, yeah, the heart is still beating, when we take these things, these organs out. So bottom line is, it is premeditated mass murder, and it is torture, and it cries to heaven for vengeance, says LifeSite News. There's no reason whatsoever, nothing could ever justify this. Nothing. It is a clear violation of the fifth commandment, thou shalt not kill. You know, the one from the Stone Age. When we look at what else is happening in terms of religious persecution around the world, we have members of Congress now demanding that Finland be punished because they're prosecuting Christians over their gay marriage statements. These are a couple of individuals, some of them who are religious leaders. I think there was a psychologist that was also involved in this. The letter that's being put together by U.S. congressmen, people like Chip Roy, Paul Gosar, Doug Lamborn, Michael Cloud, Byron Douglas, Republicans, they're sending this to Finland. They're saying free people should not have to violate and recant their deepest convictions to remain a part of a free society. Well, I absolutely agree with that. I absolutely agree with what they have to say in terms of true religious liberty both protects an individual's right to hold beliefs that are unpopular with the prevailing cultural winds of the world, but also their right to live out authentically and to profess the truths that they hold dear without fear from government interference. Those rights are fundamental and unalienable to the whole human race, and it is critical to the flourishing of both the human soul and society. Well, that is absolutely true. But I would just ask these congressmen, if they're going to write a letter to Finland over these particular issues, the violation of religious liberty, why aren't they doing that to the Biden administration, to the FDA, to the CDC? Why aren't they thinking of ways that they can expose the criminal fraud of the CDC? Why aren't they thinking of ways that they can come out and expose how it is a private organization operating at a for-profit basis? Why don't they take the gloves off? Why don't they talk about the money and the patents that people at the NIH and the CDC are allowed to make off of these types of things? Why don't they talk about what I just read, about what is happening with the humanized mice and the rest of this stuff? There's so many things that even though they don't have the votes to stop this, they could take it on. But it's a lot safer for them, isn't it, to criticize religious persecution in Finland while they look the other way at home. That's really easy. That's the easy way out. That's the coward's way out, frankly. They can virtue signal to their base while they do nothing to protect their base. So what they're coming after them for in Finland, in 2004, one of the two individuals wrote a book called Male and Female, He Created Them. Homosexual Relationship Challenges the Christian Conception of Humanity. And they launched an investigation 15 years later, in 2019. Because it used to not be a crime to talk about male and female sexuality, about biological genders, that gender is biological, objective, and basic, and binary. B-O-B, Bob. That used to not be a crime, but now it is. The Finnish prosecutor general maintained that this book was defamatory and insulting to homosexuals. A previous police investigation found that no crime had been committed. So they go on to call this ethnic agitation. They say it's defined in Finnish law as any dissemination in the public forum of an opinion that could put a group of people in danger based on their race, skin color, birth status, national origin, religion. Religion. Oh, well, we throw that one out. So that's where they're coming after them. And it is anybody who speaks out against the LGBT mafia. This is why the RNC is now kowtowing to these people. Here's a Jewish counselor who has been targeted by the Southern Poverty Law Center because he discussed biblical morality. He's a Orthodox Jew. His name is Goldberg. And the Southern Poverty Law Center is coming after him because he had an organization that he called Jonah, Jews Offering New Alternatives to Healing. And he had provided resources and counseling for people who had unwanted same-sex attractions, who were struggling with their sex addiction and struggling with pornography. So he set up this organization to help people. And the Southern Poverty Law Center came up with a very novel strategy to silence him. They used the New Jersey Consumer Fraud Act. After 4 years of litigation, the Southern Poverty Law Center was able to successfully argue, he says, that our referrals to independent counselors involved a form of fraudulent commerce. This is based on the erroneous theory that no one is capable of changing his sexual behaviors. This was the first case to ever apply the Consumer Fraud Act law to a duly constituted, not-for-profit religious organization. This holding is antithetical to the very concept of consumer fraud. Neither co-director ever received compensation for our multi-year volunteer work. And yet, who does make a lot of money? The Southern Poverty Law Center. As a matter of fact, years ago, it was about 8 years ago, 8 years, 9 years ago, I did a thing about Morris Deese and about, what was the other guy there? Mark Potok, I think was his name. Maybe he's still there. I talked about Morris Deese's history, how he was always in it for the money. Even people on the left pointed out how Southern Poverty Law Center was always in it for the money. His involvement in the civil rights movement of the 1960s was to defend the Ku Klux Klan that physically attacked and beat the people who were on the buses and burned the buses. Morris Deese defended them. And then he disappeared from, you know, the scene for the rest of the civil rights movement, reappeared after it was all over. He made a lot of money in direct mail marketing, and he was tapped by the DNC during the Carter campaign. And he offered his services as a very, very wealthy, successful direct mail marketer. He offered his services to the DNC in exchange for their mailing list. And that's what he built the Southern Poverty Law Center on, that mailing list. And he reinvented himself as somebody who was against all things racist and the Ku Klux Klan after he had made more than the median family income defending the Ku Klux Klan there in Birmingham, Alabama. And so I talked about it. I called it the prophets of hate because they seem to be able to discern prophetically all kinds of hate in everybody, except I spelled it P-R-O-F-I-T-S. That's what these people are about. I think he's probably moved on. Morris Deese has. He's enjoying his great reward of cash that he has stuffed, the millions of dollars that he's stuffed in Caribbean banks. He's now enjoying that while this Jonah organization has been swallowed by a whale. Actually, it's a great fish, specially prepared for that purpose. So they go on to say the SPLC and its legal allies shut down these three religious initiatives with which I was involved, he said. The first one was Jonah. And then there was another one, the Jewish Institute for Global Awareness, and there was another one called Funding Morality. The trial judge also crushed my own individual liberties. He ordered me to pay a multimillion-dollar penalty. He also barred me from participating in any not-for-profit organization operating in New Jersey, and he further denied me any First Amendment rights to speak about this. So he is speaking about it. Look, if the Republican congressmen want to defend religious liberty, they don't have to write a letter to Finland. It's right here in our own backyard, and it's happening all over the place, and it is happening whether you're, you know, whether you're Christian, whether you're Jewish, it seems to be coming from the same sources all of the time. Isn't that amazing? All right, we'll be right back, and we're going to talk to John Kiriakou. And this is also something that is at the very essence to that you need to understand about what is happening with our government. If you want to understand the character of our government, if you want to understand how these people can chop up babies for research, you need to go back and you need to take a look at what happened with the torture that lied us into the weapons of mass destruction. And there is new information that has now come out, new declassified documents. And that's what I wanted to talk to John Kiriakou about. The only person to go to jail based on the CIA torture program, because he was the only person to tell the truth about it and expose it. The people who actually did it, he didn't torture anybody. The people who actually did the torturing, they got promoted. We'll be right back with John Kiriakou. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned, over and over again?
Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and antisocial media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well.
If you like the Eagles,
on a dark desert highway,
the Cars, and Huey Lewis in the News,
they say the hotter rock and roll is competing.
You'll love the Classic Hits channel at APS Radio. Download our app or listen now at APSradio.com.
All right, and joining us now is John Kiriakou. Let me just give you a little bit of an introduction because it's been a while since I've talked to John. I've had the opportunity to talk to him many times, and I love to talk to somebody who has integrity. And he has walked the walk, folks. I mean, he's gone the full distance. John worked for the CIA. The CIA gave him a lot of awards. He got 10 Exceptional Performance Awards. He got a Sustained Superior Performance Award, Counterterrorism Service Medal, State Department's Meritorious Honor Award. Then he became a whistleblower about the torture program and the lies that got us involved in the Iraq War, ultimately. And then he basically is in a different career now. As a truth-telling whistleblower. He won the 2012 Joe Calloway Award for Civic Courage. They awarded this to national security whistleblowers who, at great risk to their personal and professional lives, stand up for the constitutional rights of Americans. That's probably the best description of what John Kiriakou has done. In 2016, he got the Sam Adams Award. Also in 2016, he was given a First Amendment Award by the Penn Center in the United States. He's written several books. He's got one of them is The Reluctant Spy, My Secret Life in the CIA's War on Terror. Next one was The Convenient Terrorist, Abu Zubaydah and the Weird Wonderland of America's Secret Wars. And then this one, which I think is Doing Time Like a Spy, How the CIA Taught Me to Survive and Thrive in Prison. And so joining us now is John Kiriakou. Thank you for joining us, John.
Thank you so much for having me, David. It's a pleasure.
You've got some more books that are coming out. Tell us about the other books that are coming out. When are they coming out?
I do. I have a series of three books, all coming out on February 22nd. They're available for pre-order on Amazon right now. They're called The CIA Guide to Surveillance and Surveillance Detection, The CIA Guide to Lying and Lie Detection, and The CIA Guide to Disappearing and Living Off the Grid.
Yeah, there you go. Boy, I tell you, that's perfect timing. And we'll have to get you back to talk about those because those are very well needed. Those are needed. It was when you talk about the guide to lying and lie detection, I was just astonished when Mike Pompeo said, yeah, you know, I went to West Point. They told us we don't lie, cheat, or steal or tolerate people who do. And then I went to the CIA and we have classes on doing all those things. And then the people at Texas A&M applauded that.
Yes.
You know, that was the amazing thing to me, you know, that they would mock the lack of integrity in America, that is somehow the right thing to do. And so that's why I wanted to talk to you. You went to prison, even though nobody else who actually, you didn't torture anybody, but the people who did torture people, they were all excused, exonerated, didn't pay any price. And now I saw your op-ed piece at Consortium News, the fact that there's now been some new documents released about this episode. Tell us a little bit about what's been released.
There was a dramatic event at the Supreme Court last week. Two things happened last week. This dramatic event at the Supreme Court where Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch used the word torture to describe Abu Zubaydah's treatment at the hands of the CIA. This is the first time in 20 years now that a member of the Supreme Court has used the word torture rather than that euphemism that we've all come to hate, enhanced interrogation techniques.
Yeah, exactly.
That was number one.
That guy wrote a book as well called Company Man. The guy who came up with that euphemism, he worked for the CIA. His response,
John Rizzo.
Yeah, that's right. When I read about that guy, John Rizzo, he said he joined the CIA because he was watching the church hearings, you know, the heart attack guns and how they were spying on Americans. His response, his idea about looking at that was, they need to have better lawyers. I think they need to hire me. It wasn't that he was revolted by what they were doing, but it's like, I can make a lot of money because I can do a better job defending these guys. And he did. He came up with that euphemism, enhanced interrogation. It's absolutely amazing. But I'm sorry, go ahead. And so they used the term the first time in the Supreme
Court. For the very first time. And, you know, the mainstream media just either missed it or completely ignored it. but the other thing that happened was this hearing at Guantanamo involving a prisoner by the name of Majid Khan. Majid Khan was born in Saudi Arabia to Pakistani parents. He was raised in Baltimore, Maryland. When he was 18, his mom died, and his father took the family back to Pakistan for an extended visit. While he was in Pakistan, his cousins radicalized him, and he joined Al-Qaeda. Now, I can tell you that when I was in Pakistan as the chief of counterterrorism operations for the CIA, we chased that son of a gun all over the country, and we couldn't find him. My successor, a CIA officer, found him in 2003. He was captured and sent to a series of secret prisons where he underwent merciless torture and then on to Guantanamo. Now, this is the crazy part. The crazy part is that he cooperated from the very beginning, and the more he cooperated, the more the CIA tortured him. And so he started just making information up just to get them to stop torturing him. Now, the bad part about that is, number one, it proves that torture doesn't work. Number two, you then have to commit an army of analysts to go over the information to see what's true and what's not. You have to separate the wheat from the chaff. And then, you know, by the time you've figured out what's true, the bomb has gone off, the attack has occurred, the bad guy has escaped. It's the worst way to do an interrogation. So for the very first time, with Majid Khan's testimony at Guantanamo, this information about the CIA's torture plan was made public. Nobody's ever testified under oath in an official venue about the CIA's torture program. So, David, we're getting incrementally to the point where the CIA is going to have to fish or cut bait. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got this testimony. We've got the statement by Justice Gorsuch. We've got Gina Haspel's testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee, where she said that the torture program was a mistake, even though she was one of the mothers of the torture program. So little by little, it seems, after 20 years, government is finally coming around to the position that this was a terrible mistake.
Let me ask you, when she said that in the committee hearings, was that for her confirmation to head the CIA?
Yes, it was indeed.
So she's walking back on that. It's kind of the thing where when you get caught red-handed, you say mistakes were made, right? You're not going to... I'm going to say I did something, or I'm going to say, well, mistakes were made. I'm not saying who made the mistakes, but she covered up all that stuff. I mean, she was the one who made sure that she covered up all the video. Can you imagine if the video had survived and people were able to see this?
She would never have been CIA director. Mm-hmm. You know, she was specifically told by White House counsel Harriet Myers not to destroy the tapes. These were tapes of torture sessions of Abu Zubaydah, the CIA's first high-value prisoner. And she and her boss and rabbi, Jose Rodriguez, decided, forget what the White House counsel says. We don't care what the White House counsel says. Destroy the tapes. And so she took them to an industrial grinder that exists at the CIA, and they ground those tapes up. Now, this was in addition, David, to the fact that she had flown out to the secret site just to watch the torture sessions. Wow. Not because she had anything substantive to contribute. She just wanted to be in the room while the guy was being tortured. Wow. And then later on, she headed the CIA station at Guantanamo. So she was in up to her neck in torture.
Wow. Wow. It's almost as if we promote the worst people. And you know, I've been on this. I'd talked to you before the Trump campaign, and when Trump and Eric were talking about that, I go back and I looked at some of the comments that were being made back in the 2016 campaign, where Trump was saying, "Believe me, it works." You know, this whole idea of that that's been sold to everybody by 24, the ticking time bomb, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And yet, you know, as he's saying, "Believe me, it works," he's also criticizing, rightfully criticizing, the lies about weapons of mass destruction that lied us into the Iraq War. And that was a product of some of that very same torture, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely, yes. The entire Iraq War was based on a lie. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember sitting in some of these meetings at CIA headquarters where analysts would be screaming at each other over weapons of mass destruction. We even brought analysts from the Department of Energy one time to talk about weapons of mass destruction. The bottom line was that there just weren't any. and a policy decision was made that, you know, it doesn't matter if there weren't any or not. We're going to go ahead and do this.
Yeah. And I brought this up again, you know, when we had recently, you had Colin Powell, who passed on. Mm-hmm. And Colin Powell admitted, didn't he, that he knew that it was a lie even as he was selling this. Did he?
David, I wrote a piece just after Colin Powell died that I'm very proud of. And I told a story in this op-ed about how I went to the CIA one Sunday night at 10 o'clock because I was the deputy director's executive assistant. And so I would get easily 10, 12,000 cables a day. And I had to get through them so that I could brief the director and the deputy director at 7 a.m. on Monday. Well, you can't get through that much, you know, from when you arrive at 3 o'clock in the morning until 7 o'clock. So I'd go in on Sunday nights just to clear out my queue. Mm-hmm. And I got there one night and Colin Powell was sitting at one of the desks in the CIA Operations Center. And I said to a secretary, "What's Powell doing here?" And she said, "He's going over our changes on the State of the Union address." Well, the State of the Union address, when it's written, it's usually sent to the CIA 4 or 5 days in advance. A team of analysts takes a look at it and makes sure that, you know, nothing's classified or what's being said is true. And it had been sent over to us the week earlier. We had taken out references to Iraq's weapons of mass destruction because it just simply wasn't true. Mm-hmm. So here was Colin Powell putting it back in. And then 2 days later, on Tuesday evening, when the president delivered the State of the Union address, there was the language that we had taken out that Colin Powell had put back in. Listen, Colin Powell was a very nice man. I liked him. I enjoyed being in his company. He was a good guy, mm-hmm. but he was weak. Mm-hmm. And this is the problem with appointing generals to these top positions. They became generals by spending the previous 30 years saying, "Yes, sir."
Yes.
Well, we don't want somebody to say, "Yes, sir."
That's right.
We want somebody to say, "Mr. President, let me tell you why that's a terrible idea."
That's right.
Yeah. And that wasn't Colin Powell.
Well, I can think of that. That's a good point that you made there, John. I can think of so many different institutions that have failed because of the type of people that we pick and the places that we pick them from. You know, we're guaranteed to fail. I mean, I think of the Supreme Court justices that we have, for example. I mean, we're guaranteed to fail when we pick people like that who are basically bureaucrats and yes men. And have done this type of thing from the very beginning. Well, that's absolutely amazing. Talk a little bit about the torture, because see, this is, and I try to stress this, and this is a real mm-hmm. sticking point with me, because so much of what you know, the death and the suffering on our side, on American side, and in other countries, what has happened with these wars based on lies, it is such a horrific thing that we've now abandoned the whole concept of a justified war, and we do these preemptive wars, and then that leaves us, because it's not clearly a cause, you know, we haven't been attacked, so we have to come up with, well, I think they're about to do this or that. I mean, these are the ethics that the calculation that was used by the Japanese to attack us at Pearl Harbor. We realized at that point in time that that was a heinous act, that that was a day that would live in infamy. And yet we've had a lot of those, a lot of that type of infamy has now really become the way that we do business. And so I look at this, and when we have a government that embraces torture of prisoners, that brings it back into the world that we're living in now with January the 6th prisoners who are not being given due process but being tortured. But even to what we see at the NIH and other places where they're torturing puppies unnecessarily, where they're destroying children for their organs. And so this kind, as we embrace this type of stuff, this is how it corrupts our society. Talk a little bit about what we know now that has now been exposed about the processes of this torture. Could you go into that some in your Consortium News article?
That's a really great point. Thanks for bringing it up. I think this is so critical and so important. It's kind of the basis of the argument. Let's talk about waterboarding and two other very common torture techniques. So everybody knows what waterboarding is. You put the prisoner on a board, you strap him down, his feet are slightly elevated to his head. You put some material in his mouth that can be burlap or cloth or whatever. And then you begin pouring water on his face so that it simulates the feeling of drowning. Well, it's supposed to simulate the feeling of drowning. In fact, we've killed people with this technique. They had to be revived. Abu Zubaydah being one of them, Majid Khan being another one. They actually drown, and then we have to revive them. That's supposed to be the severest form of torture that was approved during the Bush administration. But I've always been of the opinion that there were two other techniques that were worse than torture, worse than waterboarding, rather. One was sleep deprivation. We know from the American Psychological Association, the APA, that people begin to lose their minds at day seven with no sleep. They begin to die of organ failure at day nine.
Wow.
But the CIA was authorized to keep people awake for 12 days, 12 days with no sleep. And I don't mean that somebody just nudges you in your bed. I mean, you're chained to an eye bolt in the ceiling so that you can't sit or kneel or lay or get comfortable in any way. And there's industrial strength lights on you 24/7. And then music just blasting. And usually it's the same song over and over and over again, 24 hours a day, just to make you crazy. People die from sleep deprivation. Wow. The other one was called the cold cell. And this is where you're chained to that eye bolt in the ceiling again. You're stripped naked. Your cell is chilled to 50 degrees Fahrenheit. And then every hour, a CIA officer goes into the cell and throws a bucket of ice water on you. Well, we killed two more prisoners with that technique. The Justice Department never said the CIA could murder prisoners, right? But they did it anyway. And then there were these techniques that were not authorized that the CIA did anyway, just kind of calculating, well, it's better to ask for forgiveness than to ask for permission. For example, with Abu Zubaydah, we learned that he had an irrational fear of insects. And so they put him in a coffin. They put a diaper on him. They put him in a coffin. They would leave him in the coffin for a week or 2 weeks at a time, opening it up only long enough to change his diaper and to throw food in there. And then they threw a box of cockroaches in with him just to make him insane. They knew that it would make him insane.
Wow.
And now we've got prisoners who have gone through these techniques where they're unable to participate in their own defenses. It just gets worse and worse. And if I may, I want to bring up one other point. In 1946, David, we executed Japanese soldiers who had waterboarded American POWs.
Yes.
Okay. We executed them. That was a death penalty crime. In January of 1968, the Washington Post ran a front page photograph of an American POW. I'm sorry, of an American soldier waterboarding a North Vietnamese POW. On the day that that photo was published, Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara ordered an investigation. The soldier was arrested. He was convicted of torture and sentenced to 20 years in prison. So why is it that waterboarding was a death penalty offense in 1946. It was worthy of 20 years in a military prison in 1968. But in 2002, magically, it's legal. The law never changed.
Yeah, we changed. We changed as a society. Yeah, we have become what we fought, quite frankly. I mean, you take a look at Operation Paperclip, where they brought these people back. One of the things, Annie Jacobson's got an excellent book about Operation Paperclip. And it kind of struck me because there was only really one thing that made it into the press at the time that was happening. And that was a program that they had to revive people. German pilots were being shot down over the English Channel, and they found that they were getting to a lot of them just a little bit too late. They had frozen to death, and so they wanted to figure out how they could revive somebody that had frozen to death, and maybe if they had only died for 15 minutes or something like that. And so they did a program where they were taking prisoners, and they were freezing them to death, and then by trial and error trying to figure out how they could revive them. And that was discovered, and an Army officer came after, once he discovered that, he reported it, but the people who were higher up wanted that information, and so they brought that guy in as part of Paperclip. Now, that got exposed in the press. People were upset about that, and actually, I think that figured into the Captain America legend. They used that as part of the popular culture, But the reality is that we're doing that kind of stuff all the time. We have now adopted the idea that the end justifies the means, whether that means torturing somebody or whether that means, putting out, using babies or puppies or whoever, or just doing a mass experiment on all of humanity because, we've got a greater purpose here. And that's what's really scary about that. And that really has become the characteristic of our government and our society, because people in society are, for the most part, not really concerned about this. That's the thing that bothers me. Not so much that we would have people who do this, because as Frank Serpico said many times, you're always in any institution, you're always going to have some bad people. The question is, will you pull those people out and do something about it? That says something about not just our government, but our society in general, that we tolerate this kind of stuff and even defend it.
Oh, you're so right. You're so right. And let's look at some of the people who were instrumental in this torture program. Look at George Tenet, the former CIA director, went on to a $6 million book advance. Let's look at Jose Rodriguez, the former head of counterterrorism and deputy director of the CIA for operations. He went on to a $6 million book advance. We had Rick Prado from the Counterterrorism Center, who was a CIA assassin, who now lives next door to Jose Rodriguez in St. Augustine, Florida, and has enjoyed his $1 million book advance. Mm. Our society has changed dramatically. It pains me to say this, but we no longer have the kind of respect for the Constitution that we once had. And frankly, I blame most prominently the congressional oversight committees, because this is their job specifically to make sure that these things don't happen. And instead, they just allow themselves to be sucked right in.
Well, I think that they are essentially a product of I'd lay the blame really at the church at large in America. We've lost our moral compass. We've lost the importance of ethics. And why would we expect in a society like this where we pay no attention to that, why would we expect these people and government to have those values either? I didn't get a chance to, well, I want to talk a little bit more about what happened with the torture, but I do want to ask you something else too that has happened since we were last able to talk. What is going to happen now at this point? Because you talk in your op-ed piece about Khan and the fact that he's going to get, a 26-year sentence. But because of what came out, you had everybody saying, well, we need to have some clemency about this, even though this guy is and you point out, he's a very dangerous person. We don't want him out. But it's been said that you can judge a society by the way that it treats its prisoners. And we see how he was treated in this. We see how people are being treated as part of January the 6th. I have talked to family members of people who are incarcerated in these communication management units that we have now, two of them. I think a third one is being built in the United States. The types of conditions that you're talking about there, John, where they're kept in very cold circumstances and they don't have a bed to lay on and that type of thing, not necessarily suspended from the ceiling, but the rest of the stuff is already there. And that's for political dissidents, not just for foreign terrorists that's happening.
That's right.
So, yeah, talk a little bit about what happens to this particular individual, and is with this testimony that's come out, what do you expect to have happen with this, if anything?
I think that Majid Khan is going to be released, if not in February, soon after. He has spent the last almost 20 years cooperating with the CIA. The military tribunal understands that. This sentence that's supposed to keep him incarcerated until 2038 was a formality. He's not going to be incarcerated till 2038. So I think that Majid Khan is going to get out, and he mm-hmm. should get out. He's been in for almost 20 years. He's paid his price.
Do you think he's changed? I don't want to torture people, but we do have prisons to keep dangerous people. That you don't think he's a danger anymore?
Yeah. In fact, the Guantanamo psychologists also believe that he's changed. He's recanted everything that he did. He's apologized. He's said all the right things over the years. You know, a lot of these guys, David, it just takes the fire out of them.
Oh, yeah.
They're broken at Guantanamo. Mm-hmm. They just can't do it anymore. They want to just go home.
Yeah.
CMUs, communications management units. I'm so glad you brought this up. There's a whistleblower who was sentenced recently here in the Eastern District of Virginia, in Alexandria, Daniel Hale. Daniel was the whistleblower who told us that the American drone program was killing mostly civilians. 80% of the targets turned out to be civilians, and he leaked that information to The Intercept. He was arrested and charged with 5 or 6 counts of espionage, and the government was asking for 14 years for each one of those counts.
Wow. Daniel
ended up pleading guilty to 1 count without a deal. It was unbelievably risky what he did, but he pleaded guilty and threw himself at the mercy of the court. He had Judge Liam O'Grady, probably the best, the most thoughtful judge in the Eastern District of Virginia. I was one of the whistleblowers who packed that courtroom on sentencing day, July 29th. And I sat with Tom Drake, the NSA whistleblower. Mm-hmm. And Judge O'Grady gave Daniel Hale 45 months in prison and dismissed all the other charges with prejudice. 45 months isn't really 45 months. If you participate in the drug and alcohol program, they take 12 months off. You get 15% off for good behavior. You get 6 months off for halfway house. You get 6 months off for home confinement. And so he was really looking at 18 or 20 months. The judge also ordered that he be sent to a low security prison at Butner, North Carolina, which is the Bureau of Prisons hospital complex, so that his PTSD, very severe PTSD, could be treated. So what did the Bureau of Prisons do? They sent him to a supermax at Marion, Illinois, and put him in the communications management unit. Now, who else is in the communications management unit with him? Now, this is the same unit where John Gotti died. Mm-hmm. Right. John Gotti was there. Mm-hmm. Right now, he's in there with the last surviving member of the Abu Nidal terrorist organization. Mm-hmm. He's in there with the last surviving hijacker of Egypt Air Flight 458 that killed 60 people. Mm-hmm. He's in there with the most dangerous, murderous members of the Aryan Brotherhood who exist in the United States. And you have to ask why. Well, it's because the Justice Department was so angry that he got this short sentence, they just decided to screw him and to make his life as difficult as they possibly could. Now, they've done this with another whistleblower, who I think you know, Marty Gottesfeld.
Yes. Oh, yes. I've interviewed Marty's wife several times. Yes.
Dana, mm-hmm. You know, this is another travesty. What was Marty's grave crime?
Oh, he offended Harvard.
Yes.
That's what he did. He embarrassed Harvard.
He did a denial of service attack.
Yeah, I know.
On Harvard and Boston Children's Hospital during their fundraising weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And that necessitates 10 years.
Yes.
In a maximum security communications management unit. But this is what our Justice Department does. If they don't like the fact that your sentence was short, they set out to just screw you.
That's right. Yeah. Schaefer Cox. Another political dissident. He's also in the same one. It's absolutely amazing when we look at that. And that's what I want people to understand, that has now come home.
Yeah, you terrible. Know,
we have excused this type of torture abroad. We even cheered it. We have, conservative presidential candidate Trump cheers that as something that is effective. And now that it's being brought home and it's being used against people who are not just terrorists or violent individuals like that, but to manage the speech and the communications of people who are political dissidents. And I think that's the key thing right there. This communication mm-hmm. management unit, the way this is metastasized. And now we're seeing this, of course, the January the 6th people. I mean, they're there for months and months. They should have a trial. If they're violent, fine. You know, go ahead and give them a trial. But the abuse that is happening to them, the furor of this one judge who said, one of the people who's suffering from cancer said, "You're denying him treatment. What's the matter with you?" I've given you orders and you've ignored these orders. That's what is happening now in our prison system. And it is a very concerning thing to see how our institutions have been have become corrupt and vindictive, really, is what's happening.
It's exactly what it is. I spoke with a Danish reporter last week who was doing a story about the U.S. prison system. And she had actually gotten a tour of the D.C. jail, where many of these January 6th people are being held. And she said that it was like walking into a nightmare.
Yeah.
And I said, sure, because we have a different philosophy of incarceration here. The purpose of incarceration in the United States is to punish.
Yes.
The purpose of incarceration in Northern Europe is to rehabilitate. And that's why their recidivism rates are so low. I said, since the Jimmy Carter administration, we haven't had a federal budget for training or education. You know, time used to be where you go to prison and you come out having learned a skill. You come out as a plumber or an electrician or a mechanic or something.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't done that since Jimmy Carter was president.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you want a GED, for example, that class is taught by another prisoner. Mm-hmm. So it's a completely different philosophy here.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. Let's talk a little bit about your brush with Rudy Giuliani in terms of trying to get the FR. I want you to tell this story to everybody. I've read what you had to say about it, but tell them what happened. Because you've done your time, but you just wanted to get that taken off of your record in the same way that the guy that they ran through the ringer. He was on and I forget what his name is. I've interviewed him a couple of times. He was retiring and he wanted to just take a picture of his bunk and so he could show his kids. But technically, any picture is not allowed. It is confidential. And so when they found out that he'd taken that picture, they decided they would send him to prison. And this was all happening at the same time that you had this massive security violation done by Hillary Clinton with her unsecured email server and so forth. And yet this guy, because he took a picture or two of his bunk and not an intention to show it to anybody, to do any harm to the U.S., they gave him this draconian prison sentence. And so he got he served his time, but he got his criminal record removed, I believe, by Trump. And so you wanted to talk to Trump about possibly getting that off of your record, because that shuts a lot of things down. What does that do to you to have that on your record, by the way?
Well, under the Obama administration, when I was convicted, the Justice Department seized my federal pension. I had 20 years of proud federal service. I had saved $770,000 and they took every last cent of it.
Wow.
I lost the right to vote, which was finally restored several years after I got home from prison. And for the rest of my life, I've lost my gun rights. Mm. And you know how hard it is for a former CIA officer to not be permitted to have a gun?
Oh, yeah. There's some bad guys out there who got your name on their email list, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and other things.
Wow. Yes, I miss it. So I really believed that I had a shot at a pardon under Donald Trump. I have a friendly personal relationship with Tucker Carlson. And so Tucker had me on his show 9 times over the course of the 4 years of the Trump administration. And every time I would look right into the camera and I would ask the president to pardon me. You know, I would tell the story. The Obama people went after me. You know, you're the only one who can give me my life back. And it resulted at one point in a meeting with Jared Kushner, who was just a nasty, cold jerk.
Oh, so he's exactly the way he appears to be.
Yeah, he is.
In real life, he's really that way.
He really is. So that didn't get me anywhere. And then finally, a friend of mine said, you need to get to Rudy Giuliani. Giuliani's getting all kinds of people pardoned. And the sad truth is, and I hate to sound crass, but pardons were for sale in the Trump administration.
That's right.
They really were.
Yep.
So so I reached out to a guy who I know who works for Giuliani. And I said, you know, listen, I'm really interested in a pardon. Here's my story. Here's who I've spoken to. I've got Tucker Carlson helping me and a couple of other people, Alan Dershowitz. And he said, well, as it turns out, we're going to be in Washington next week. So why don't we all get together? I said, great. I'll meet up with you anytime you want. And he said, and I should have known from the beginning, this was a problem. He said, well, we've got to meet before 2 because Rudy's usually so drunk by 2 that he can't get any work done. And I said, okay. So we met at noon at the Trump Hotel. And it was Giuliani, his number 2, my lobbyist, and me. And so we're talking about, you know, the weather and the bar is really nice. And, oh, there goes, you know, Matt Gaetz walking into the bar. And and I said, so about the issue of this pardon. And as soon as I said it, Giuliani says, I have to hit the head. And he stood up and he walked away. And I looked at his number 2 and I said, what just happened? And he said, you never talk business with Rudy. You talk business with me and then I pass it to Rudy. Like it's the Sopranos, right?
Exactly.
So
it literally is.
Yeah. So I said, all right, I want a pardon. I need a presidential pardon and I just can't seem to get any traction. And he said, well, Rudy's going to want $2 million. And I said, $2 million. First of all, I don't have $2 million. And even if I did, I wouldn't spend it to recover a $770,000 pension.
Yeah.
And he said, okay, well, it's $2 million. And that was the end of it. And Giuliani came back from the men's room. We shook hands and I walked out and that was the end of it. Well, it turned out he had been doing this with a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw later in the New York Times, there was an article about his divorce, which I think is his fourth divorce. But he said that he's a member of 17 country clubs and that he needs $6 million a year to maintain his current lifestyle.
Wow.
So this is what he was doing. He was just trying to gouge people as best he could at the end of the Trump administration, because he had gone all in on Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew that if Trump were to lose the election, he was done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what's happened. Giuliani, you know, he's going to end up selling single cigarettes on the street corner.
Maybe hair dye.
If this goes any longer.
Maybe
he
could get a hair dye sponsor.
That's right.
You'd have to. Yeah, I used to have this problem when I would start sweating when I was lying and my hair dye would run down my face. But with this new improved brand, this is why you should use this brand. This never happens to me again. That guy is absolutely an amazing clown. And of course, you know, he was grifting everybody. This whole Stop the Steal thing was such an amazing grift. Yes. I just could not believe it.
I say that all the time on my own radio show. You can't just make these outrageous accusations on the courthouse steps and then go into the courthouse and never bring them up.
Yeah.
You're going to get suspended. You're going to lose your law license. And that's exactly what's happened.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I could see this stuff happening with Steve Pachinik and his sting. Do you remember that? Where he said 2 days
oh,
after.
Oh, yes.
You know, and so I started writing stuff at the same time. But, you know, they say this amazing stuff and they just keep saying it and they keep doubling down on it and they keep going and nobody ever calls them on it. It's just amazing to me to see how these guys just keep running on and on. I don't think it helped you any, John, to be going on with Tucker. I don't know if Trump really likes Tucker. I know that he's very jealous of Tucker's hair. You know, he's made comments.
No doubt.
You've got much better hair than I do, but I've got a lot more women. Remember that from the 2016 campaign? So he probably is jealous not only of his hair, but of his following.
Yeah.
So
he probably is. And I think you're probably right. You know, he went hot and cold on Tucker for a long time. Mm-hmm. And another great supporter I had was Judge Napolitano, and who's a genuinely good guy, you know, just a genuinely nice guy. And I met up with him and he said, I'd love to help you. But he said, Trump is so angry at me right now that if I even mentioned your name, I think that would kill any chances you had at a pardon.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He went after Napolitano, didn't he? But, you know, and that's an interesting thing. We really do need somebody that is outside this, you know, the system that they have that they pick from. You know, it would have been good to have somebody like that, but it would have been a big lift for him, you know, to go outside of the Georgetown University farm, you know, to get somebody. He just wasn't up for a fight like that.
And, you know, this is an important point, too. There's a process that you're supposed to go to. You have to go online to the website of the Office of the U.S. Pardon Attorney. You fill out the form, the FBI investigates you, and then they make a recommendation 99.5% of the time, and I'm not exaggerating, it's to deny a pardon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but that's not why the system was set up. The system was supposed to be set up to pardon people like Abraham Lincoln used to pardon people all the time. He would stay up late at night just pardoning people all night long. And that's not how the system or what the system has morphed into. The Office of the U.S. Pardon Attorney is supposed to be housed at the White House. It's supposed to be independent of the Justice Department, and it's not. It's housed at the Justice Department. And what they do is they'll come up with a package of your application, of the FBI investigation, of the negative recommendation, and they send it to your prosecutors and say, hey, this guy applied for a pardon. We don't think he should get it. And the FBI doesn't think he should get it. So what do you think?
Mm-hmm.
And they say, well, no, of course not. That would mean that I shouldn't have prosecuted him in the first place. And then they send the whole thing to the White House and say, we deny or we recommend denial of all these people. So nobody gets pardoned.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's really what America has turned into. It's one of the things that Biden is so proud of, the fact that he came up with mandatory minimums and things like that. We have turned America into, you know, we incarcerate more people than anyone. And, you know, it's not just the way that we treat them. It's how many people we have. And that's started coming in through the war on drugs, but particularly through Joe Biden, who has no respect whatsoever for natural rights or for the Bill of Rights. I mean, he's always been that over-the-top authoritarian. That was the thing about him with the Clarence Thomas hearing, the fact that he was focused on Clarence Thomas. He had an issue with Clarence Thomas over what Clarence Thomas had written about natural rights. And that's what the left got angry with him about, because he didn't come after Thomas over the Anita Hill accusations, but because he completely ignored that. His thing that he was upset about was, you mean that you think that people have rights? That's the world that we live in now. Those type of people, just like Gina Haspel, she gets put at the top of the CIA, and you got somebody who wants to lock up everybody in America. He gets made president, and what is he trying to do? He's trying to lock us out of society if we don't get the shot. I mean, it's absolutely amazing what we're seeing.
Yes, you're absolutely right. You know, Joe Biden, was no mystery to American voters. The guy's been around since 1972. Mm-hmm. We knew what Joe Biden was like. Mm-hmm. We knew what his record was in the United States Senate. This is a guy who had been chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee. He had been chairman of the Judiciary Committee. He had been chairman of the Finance Committee, which writes American tax laws. So we knew what we were getting with Joe Biden. Yep. Nobody should be surprised now that he's just walking all over our civil rights and civil liberties.
That's right. Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. Well, it has been a great it's been great talking to you, John, and we got to make this not take so long. So tell us something about what you're doing. You've got a radio program now, is that correct?
I do. I have a radio program. It's also a podcast. It's called The Backstory with Lee Stranahan, formerly of Breitbart. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're on all the usual streaming platforms, iHeartRadio, iTunes, Spotify. And I write for consortiumnews.com and Covert Action Magazine and write books and give speeches and
I'm really, you got a great series of books. I'm going to have to get them and I'm going to have to get you back on to talk about those.
Love to.
Those are very appropriate. Got great titles and I'm sure they're going to be excellent books. That's coming up February 22nd, did you say?
February 22nd.
Okay, yep. Great. And I guess people can pre-order that now on Amazon?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. Well, thanks so much. It's always fascinating to talk to you. And I just want to thank you again for your integrity and for standing up.
Thank you so much.
Because that's what it takes. You know, one person standing up with integrity against this is just so powerful because so many people will bend down to it. And as the saying goes, the person who stands up gets hammered down. And so thank you for being there. Thank you for what you've done, John. I really
appreciate you so much. All right, thank you for your support.
Well, thank you. We're going to take a quick break and we will be right back, folks. Stay with us. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Elvis.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
And the sweet sounds of Motown. Find them on the Oldies channel at APSradio.com.
All right, and come and take my juice. Let's talk a little bit about the Trump juice, because there is, I think, this is a very important story, and I want to make sure that I got this today to people. Florida may withdraw from OSHA oversight over these Biden mandates. And let me just say before we talk about exactly what this is, it is nullification, if you will. It's one way to nullify it. And this is what I really appreciate about DeSantis in particular, but also this is not just him. This is also the House Speaker, as well as the Senate President, who are Republicans as well. What the Republican legislature in Florida, and again, I'll give credit to when credit is due to DeSantis, because he has not gotten in the way like some other Republican governors have, like Brad Little in Idaho or like Greg Abbott in Texas. He's not gotten in the way of the Republican legislature trying to stop some of this stuff. And what I really like about what they're doing in Florida is the fact that they're not simply challenging this in court. That's the easy thing to do. That's the lazy thing to do. And that's typically all that is ever done, if anything is done. They will fire off their legal department, and all it is just a token resistance. They can say, well, we did everything we could. We challenged it in court. What else do you want me to do? Well, there's a lot of things that you can do. And so when you look at what DeSantis is doing, and it's not just about OSHA, but it's also about what is happening with the open borders as well. He's looking at what is being done and saying, all right, well, what is it possible for us to actually do ourselves, not passively shoving this off to the court system? And so in this particular case with OSHA, what they're saying is that they're looking at several different options to resist this. You know, lawsuit is one of them, and they're involved in a lawsuit, but also a potential withdrawal from oversight of the federal OSHA system. See, there's state OSHA departments as well as the federal OSHA. And since Biden is going to abuse the powers that they claim to have for OSHA, quite frankly, under the Ninth and Tenth Amendment, I don't see any authority for the federal government to do this. It shouldn't even be something that the federal government is doing. You can't really defend it. It is something that can be done at the local level, just like the FDA. I don't see any authority for the FDA to exist either. You have inspectors who will go around and inspect food and inspect restaurants and that type of thing. That should be done by local government. That should be done by the state government. That is a legitimate function of government, I think, but not for the FDA. The FDA, there is nothing in the Constitution that gives the FDA that kind of authority. It's something that should be done by state and local government. And I think the same thing would be true of OSHA, if you wanted to put safety regulations on the workplace. So they go on to say, if OSHA, the Department of Labor and OSHA, is going to be weaponized as a way to hold hostage businesses throughout the state of Florida, no problem. We want a different plan, said the State House Speaker Chris Sproules during a press conference. We want out of OSHA. I want out of OSHA. I want out of the FDA. I want out of the DEA. I can go down the whole list of alphabet agencies that are out there. You know, by the way, OSHA never existed in the federal government until it was created by Richard Nixon. It's another one of these abominations that he put in place. But they said, we will submit our own regulatory authority and we will say goodbye to the federal government. And then the Senate president, so that was the House Speaker. The Senate president, Wilton Simpson, said, quote, after 40 years in the private sector, running businesses that depend on an in-person workforce where significant safety risks have to be mitigated, I am shocked to see such an unconstitutional mockery of the important role of OSHA. And he said, that said, the article from Zero Hedge says, even if Florida legislators are able to agree to ditch OSHA, the process could take several years, according to a report citing the proposal sponsored by Republicans Senator Travis Hudson and Representative Ardian Zika. This, of course, wouldn't allow enough time for Florida businesses to avoid OSHA fines. Well, it's not clear to me why this has to take several years. The bottom line is that when you have a president and a federal government, or you have government at any level that is clearly violating the law, then you have to stop them. And this is not like, oh, okay, well, you're violating the law, so let's see what you're going to allow us to do to roll this back. This is something that is happening with immigration as well. And I want to just, well, while I'm on DeSantis, there is something else here that I just realized I haven't talked about. I want to get to that in a second. But as we look at what is happening with the flights, and DeSantis has gone on with Tucker Carlson, and they have talked about this, Biden is sending these secret night flights of migrants. And I talked about this a few weeks ago. The New York Post did an article talking about these secret flights going into New Jersey. There are also secret flights that were going into Jacksonville. They would put them on a bus and then drive them somewhere else. They didn't know exactly where. The New York Post followed some of the kids on these flights. It does look like a human trafficking operation. And you have to ask yourself, why would they make this secret? Why does this have to be kept secret? And it is extremely secretive. Nobody in the Florida government is allowed to know what is going on. And so you look at this and you say, all right, is this a child trafficking, human trafficking situation? Are they doing something subversive in order to bring in dangerous people? You know, we see that you know, what is happening in Haiti, everything is breaking down there. They got massive gangs in Haiti, and yet we have the southern border wide open for people coming in from Haiti. So as DeSantis is talking about it, he says, yeah, there's been 70 flights, and on average, there's about 36 passengers on these flights, but they're trying to put this together, doing their own investigation. And because even though this is being done by the Federal Department of Justice, by the Department of Homeland Security, by HHS, they will not tell Florida who is overseeing the flights. They will not tell them the names of the people on the flights. They will not tell them where these migrants are being taken. And in the investigation by the New York Post, what they were doing, they were following these people coming in at night. They followed some of these buses. They found that they went to a rest stop area. And then one by one, cars would show up. And they would take these kids and put them in the other cars. They said there was no ID that was being shown to anybody for any of this stuff. And why would you do that in the middle of the night? Why would you do that at a rest stop area? Everything about this is just screaming some kind of a criminal operation that is happening here. And so they said they won't respond to them or give them any information. And so the spokesperson for Larry Keefe, who is DeSantis's public safety czar, said, so who is facilitating this travel? How are they getting here? Who are the support people? Who are the sponsors? Where are they taking them? Who are these people? Well, we don't know. We don't know definitively or specifically as to why Jacksonville is a chosen place. We're having to watch and to observe, in effect, to spy on the government to see if what it is that they're doing in the middle of the night outside of these airport facilities. Everything about this is secret. It's hidden. And this is a government war against our societies. I mean, just look at the fact that they have redacted now these agreements that they made with FISA and other big pharma companies. The press conference that I played for you a couple of weeks ago where you had the members of the European Parliament saying, this is outrageous. You know, we had to go through all these different processes just to get this paper. When we got it, look, it's all blacked out. Everything is blacked out. We're not allowed to know any of this stuff. I mean, they're transporting kids around the country in the dead of night, and you're not allowed to know anything about it. Now, some of the people, it's not all just kids. One of the people involved in this was a 24-year-old Honduran who has now been arrested on suspicion of murder. He murdered a legal immigrant from Mexico who had hired him to work in his store in Jacksonville. This guy stabbed him. They've got it on surveillance footage showing him stabbing the murder victim numerous times, repeatedly hitting him with a chair for whatever reason. So we don't know if this is something is being done to bring in gang members, if this is something that's being done to bring in terrorists, if they're doing it as part of a child trafficking operation. And as DeSantis is talking about this, he says, well, you know what? I'm going to grab some of these people. I'm going to take them to Biden's home state. He says, we're thinking about suing them over this. But he said, other than this, we're trying to look at other options that we can do. And again, the people in Florida are looking at options other than just passively taking this to the court and seeing what they can get. He says it's happening. It's clandestine. And we have no say about this. We have no information about this. We got this because we had some people in the federal government leak this to us. And so he says, if they're going to come here, we're going to provide some buses and I'll send them to Delaware. And so I looked at that and I thought, how many people have come across the border? Because, you know, Delaware, Biden's home state, is really pretty small. And so, you know, we've had, and just from January to July, we had 1.1 million people come across this open, incentivized border that Biden has created. So, you know, we have about 2.2 million people. At the same rate, if it doesn't accelerate, it seems to be accelerating. But even if it doesn't accelerate, you're going to have more than 2 million, maybe 2.25 million people come across. You know how many people are in Delaware? The population of Delaware is under 1 million, 989,000. Biden has opened up our borders to more than twice the number of people in his home state. I think we should take them there, quite frankly. We should absolutely take them there. And a lot of the people who are coming in, again, this is not a racist thing. We have to have control over our borders. We have to know who's coming in. I'll just repeat, this guy that they're looking for murder, one of these immigrants that came in, unvetted, and he murdered a legal Mexican immigrant who had a business. And he was the one who was murdered. It does us absolutely no good. I've talked about this many times. People who escaped MS-13 in El Salvador. There was a guy in New York. His child was killed by these people. He said, I thought I got away from them. Well, guess what? You can't get away from them if the borders are open. And neither can the rest of us. That's it for the broadcast. Thank you for listening. Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.